then fighting, I was fighting with the builders that were in the room that we were supposed to be witness, and today we were fighting together there. Before my secretary thought of calling me to tell me it's a yes, it's yes. So I do apologize for my secretary's incompetence. Our meeting today is really exploratory in nature, really. I will explain why. I know the DG of Water will be with us a bit later. I've just been with him 5 minutes ago. And No. We're not talking about former DG. We're talking about... Actually, it's an acting DG. Will join us a bit later. I say it's exploratory in nature because obviously we've had the Planning Commission that after a lot of work have come out with the diagnostic review, and obviously Parliament or the committees of Parliament have not been engaged on this issue. So I wanted to really hear from the Commission itself. What are their processes, where are they planning to go, and how do we expect departments to fit into that? In our case, it's two departments, it's Water Affairs and Environment. And obviously we can then work out ourselves what is our role in this whole process, if we know what it is, the Commission and what government is doing, and what it is expected from our department. So that's why I'm saying it's exploratory in nature. Because obviously we'll, out of today's meeting, see where we should go with this issue. So that's really my idea when I spoke to the Minister of the National Planning Commission to suggest that we do this, that what the thinking was from the committee side. Obviously we would like to hear from the committee exactly where they see water and environment fitting into those future, I'm not sure anymore, is it 15 or 20 year plans, 100 year plans? 20 years, so it's not 100 years, okay. 20 year plans, and exactly what it is we then expect our departments to do to fit into those. So that's really the idea. And then, of course, we've also decided, we firstly had the two separate, but we decided to put them into one because it seemed a much more efficient use of time. I must also just say that the Minister has asked me to please convey his apologies for not being here overseas. As you all see, he's now become a rugby expert. So he's not overseas for any good reason. He's overseas to watch rugby. Now he's now supporting the Springboks, and he's actually become a hell of a good coach explaining all these rugby things and how people must be coached and so on. So obviously he's angling for a new job, seeing as Peter de Villiers' job may be over soon. So he's doing that important job. All right, over to the Commission. Welcome. Thank you for your time, and I hope the little explanation I've given gives you some idea what it is we're trying to do. We'll see at the end of the meeting where we go with the process. Thank you very much, and please introduce all of you.
Okay, thanks. And thanks very much for the invitation. I'm Mike Miller. I'm a commissioner with the Commission. We'll be joined shortly by Jennifer Mulwantwa. 6 o'clock planes don't agree with everybody. She just missed hers, but she will be with us, I think, in about 5 minutes. She is in Cape Town. I think many of you know Ben Naidoo, who's the head of the Secretariat for the Planning Commission, and Verena, who helps put together our work and keep us on track, particularly when we're down here. Chair, the way we'd like to take this forward, and thanks for the introduction, which is really useful, and thanks also for the new introduction to the geography of Parliament. You guys keep expanding. What we'd like to do is perhaps start with the diagnostic. Let's put that on the table, go get a rapid presentation of what there is. We'll highlight those elements of the diagnostic that are particularly relevant to water and the environment, because that's the focus of this committee. And I think we will initially just mention the sort of prospects of what's going to happen after The first plan is presented, the plan for 2030, that is due to be tabled on, well, due to be published on the 11th of 2011. I don't know why Minister Manuel is so fixed on the 11-11-11, except perhaps it's easy to remember. So what we'll do is we'll get Kuben to do the presentation, set the basis for a discussion, and then we'll, I think, play it by ear, because I think we're as interested as you are in trying to understand the mechanisms that we must use in engaging with Parliament as well as with government departments as we move forward. So by way of introduction, that's it. I should also say perhaps that our other fellow commissioner, Tasneem Essop, who again many of you will know, who really is our sort of leader from the commissioner's side on the environment issues, these minor distractions of COP17, which she's very deeply involved in, and so she hasn't been able to join us today, but she's had some input into the presentation that we'll be giving you. But with that, if I can just hand over to Kuben.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you, Chair. Chair, what I'll do is I'll run through a fairly quick presentation. I'll just introduce the diagnostic report, and then I'll start off with the process issues, introduce the diagnostic report, and then talk about the water and environmental issues specifically. That way we can leave more time for discussion. The reason why we've chosen 11-11-11, there is some reality to this. The commission was inaugurated by President Zuma on the 11th of May 2010, and the president gave the commission 18 months, and so that's precisely 11-11-11. That's why the date. In the inauguration of the commission, the president was quite clear on a few things. The first is that he was appointing commissioners who were not in government, who were appointed because of their expertise in particular areas, to provide an independent, critical, and long-term view of achievements in South Africa, developments in South Africa. One of the reasons why he chose this particular format is, in his view, in his words, politicians often take a short-term horizon, a short-term view, and they often think in silos. And he's set up the commission in the way in which he set it up so that we can deal with those two specific issues. Chair, what I should also state is that the Planning Commission is an advisory body. I think that I need to emphasize this point. The Planning Commission is not a decision-making body. Our task is to advise the President and Cabinet on issues impacting on long-term development. So our reports will be tabled, handed to the President. It is up to the President and Cabinet to accept, modify, reject any recommendations. While we're advisory, I guess we're advisory from a privileged position in that the chairperson is a minister, full minister. We have a secretariat that's based inside the presidency. We've got access to Parliament, government departments, cabinet committees, clusters, state-owned enterprises, etc. But institutionally, we are an advisory body. Our task is to develop a vision statement for 2030. Initially, the terms of reference was 15 years, but the president changed that to 20, to produce a development plan for how this vision can be achieved, and then to report on issues affecting long-term development. And I've emphasized the advisory role. Some ways that raises the burden on the commission to convince the country and cabinet of our arguments through evidence, through good research, and through testing ideas with experts and society at large. The terms of reference outlines 11 areas and issues around long-term availability and sustainability of water, energy consumption, biodiversity and conservation, environmental issues and climate change probably take up half of those 11 areas in the terms of reference. Welcome, Commissioner Mulwantwa. Just quickly, this is the list of the minister plus 25 commissioners. So that's the 25 commissioners, and you can see next to those next to their names broadly what areas of expertise they have or areas that they've worked in. Our deliverables and our work plan quickly. On the 9th of June this year, we published a diagnostic report. On the 11th of November, we will release the vision statement and what we would call a draft development plan. Draft because it has to still be considered by the President and Cabinet for adoption. We're in the process of consulting. We've consulted with Cabinet. We've consulted with civil society, NGOs through NEDLAC. We've met the clusters. We've consulted with directors, generals, and ministers through the cluster system as well. We've met with all 9 provincial executive committees. We've met with several state-owned enterprises and I guess ordinary people from the public as well.
Parliament was left out of that process.
Parliament consulted, now talking to various portfolio committees. We have briefed Parliament through the committee of chairs of leaders of the parties, and we're now briefing various portfolio committees. I think this is the third portfolio committee, third set of briefings. On the 9th of June, we tabled both a draft, or not a draft, what we call initial elements of a vision statement that would help lay the basis for a vision statement. These are drawn from the Constitution, from the preamble of the Constitution, and from the Bill of Rights, which in turn are drawn from the Freedom Charter in the main, and the constitutional principles developed in 92. I won't run through them in detail, but essentially some of the key elements there that we've included is a democratic state rooted in the values of the Constitution, people united in diversity, quality education, healthcare, and infrastructure, comprehensive social security covering citizens in need, the natural wealth harnessed sustainably, protecting the environment, using technology, people having access to jobs and the protection of workers' rights and skills issues, that business is afforded an environment to invest and profit while promoting the common interests of the country, that we have an efficient state that protects citizens, provides quality services and infrastructure, and gives leadership to development, that we have mutual respect and human solidarity, and that South Africa collectively contributes towards a better Africa and the world. We've welcomed public comment on that. We've received extensive public comment on those the elements of the vision statement. In the plan, we hope to provide greater definition to this, to amend it, modify it, taking into account the public's concerns. To provide specific definitions, for example, what is high quality education, to provide some targets and then to set out how we would achieve that. While the purpose of the diagnostic report is to highlight the key challenges facing South Africa, it would be incorrect of us and unbalanced of us not to mention the fact that South Africa has achieved a significant amount in the 2 decades from 1990. As a country, we've been able to negotiate a relatively peaceful transition to a democratic state. We've been able to build institutions of democracy. We've been able to host various events. We've been able to stabilize the economy. We've been able to hold free and fair elections. The institutions of democracy, from the Constitutional Court and institutions of economic management from the Reserve Bank, all had to be built almost from scratch. We've been able to deracialize the public service and break down the apartheid silos within the public service. All of those have been major achievements, and those should not be underestimated. Despite those achievements, our view overall is that we have not made significant progress in eliminating poverty and inequality. The level of poverty has declined very marginally, depending on which poverty line we use. If we use a poverty line of about 500 rand per person per month, the poverty rate has declined from about 53% to about 48%. If we use a lower poverty line, closer to $1.25, the poverty line has come down a little faster. The poverty headcount has come down a little faster. But by our accounts, we've not made as much progress in reducing poverty as we would have liked. Inequality remains high, and by some measures, it's probably higher today than it was in 1994. In 1994, or 95 rather, the top 20% of income earners earned 70% of national income. Today, the top 20% of income earners earn 72% of national income. In 1994, the bottom 40% of households earned 6% of national income, and today they earn about 6% of national income. There's been a significant deracialization of the top end of the income spectrum. In 1994, about half of the income spectrum, the top 20%, was black, and about 33% were African. Today, about 68%, I think, are black, and about 53-54% are African. So even within the top 20%, there's been a significant deracialization of the top end of the income spectrum. In the view of the Planning Commission, there are 9 reasons why we think we've not achieved greater progress in reducing poverty and inequality, and hence we think that if we tackle these 9, we will make greater progress in achieving the objectives of reducing, eliminating poverty and reducing inequality by 2030. I won't run through all of them, but just to state quite quickly that in our view, 2 are more important than the other 7. And those are that too few South Africans work, and that the quality of school education, particularly for black learners, remains poor. Let me just say a little bit about that in a few minutes. Often we focus on the unemployment rate, but let's turn that around and focus on the employment rate for a second. If you take the population between age 18 and 60, only 41 out of 100 South Africans work. That's formal sector or informal sector. Right? That's 27 working in the formal sector and about 13 or 14 in the informal sector. At 41, that's a very low ratio. Developed countries have about 70-odd% of their adult population working. Developing countries have about 60-odd%. So countries like Brazil and India are at about 60%. Countries like the US and the UK are about 70% before the recession. It's fallen slightly in those countries too. The graph on the screen shows that not only do we have lots of people in unemployment, but there are 2 other distinctive features of our unemployment problem. The first is that the vast majority of unemployed people are young. Right? About 2/3 of the unemployed are young. The second point that what is shown on that graph is that about 2/3 of the unemployed have never worked. And particularly a large proportion of the young unemployed had never worked. While we've been able to improve access to school education, we've been able to increase access very nicely. We've been able to reduce class sizes. We've been able to improve the equity of school funding. The quality of school education for black learners remains poor. And there are several data sources to confirm this. We use in our diagnostic report a 2007 survey that showed that if you define top performing school, only 1% of African schools are top performing, whereas 31% of white, Indian, and colored schools would be top performing, and 88% of African schools would be poorly performing. If we use the annual national assessment results announced by the Minister of Education this year, the picture is very similar. For the first time, South Africa tested all grades 1 to 6, so we tested 7 million learners in a standardized external test. There's some dispute about whether there was comparability on language, but let's ignore that for now. The literacy rate at grade 3 level was about 30%, and at grade 6 level, about 26%. And so we're failing the vast majority of children in our schooling system. Just quickly, we've underinvested in infrastructure for over a generation. The after apartheid education, the second most significant legacy is the spatial settlement patterns that apartheid has left us with. And there are two dimensions of this. The first is the former homelands. 20 million people still live in the former homelands. 24 million people lived in the homelands in 94. So there's been some out-migration from the former homelands. But at 20 million, it's still 40% of the population. Just as an aside, that ratio of 41 over 100 for working people, if you take the former homelands as a separate country, the ratio is 13. Right? That's formal or informal, subsistence, agriculture, anything. So the vast majority of people, adults in the former homelands, do not do any work, are not working of any sort. And they live far from places of economic activity, serviced on poor lands, inadequate water provision, inadequate municipal services, household services, and social services. Within cities, we have a very similar problem. The poorest live far from places of work. This is not unknown to you. If you take average travel distances in a city like London, it's 7 kilometers. In Paris, it's 6 kilometers. In Tshwane, it's 26 kilometers. In Cape Town, it's 22 kilometers. So that's a density map for Cape Town. And you can see the density is the highest in places like Khayelitsha, Nyanga, Wollastein, Mitchell's Plain, whereas the jobs are in the city center. The distance from Khayelitsha to the city center is about 23, 24 kilometers, thereabout. And so people have to travel long distances by international standards. The fifth diagnostic feature that we raise is that South Africa has a resource-intensive development path, and that is not sustainable. I'll just cite two factors, and we'll come back to this in a bit more detail. While we're the 27th largest economy in the world, we're the 12th largest CO2 producer in the world. So our economy is quite energy intensive, and our energy mix is quite coal intensive, carbon intensive, and that's not a sustainable solution. We're amongst the 30th driest countries in the world. We use a significant proportion of the water that falls on land, and we use a relatively high proportion of water in agriculture, which is not uncommon internationally, but it does raise issues of scarcity and contestation. At least two of the nine major catchment areas in South Africa are defined as water stressed. Projections are that by 2030, up to five of the nine catchment regions could be described as water stressed. The public health system is ailing, and there's a series of factors, from a high disease burden on the one hand to policy mistakes that we've made in the public health sector. The HIV epidemic, the TB epidemic, infant mortality, crime and road accidents mean that we've got a disease burden that's almost unparalleled in the world. And the health system is not coped, partly because of the high disease burden, partly because of mistakes that we've made in public health policy. The seventh diagnostic feature is that the performance of the public service is uneven. And when you're a bureaucrat and you write the performance of the public service is uneven, what you'd actually like to write is the performance of the public service is often poor. And so uneven is almost a euphemism in that context. For the majority of poor people, the public services that they receive is not adequate. We cite three reasons for this. The first is what we call policy instability. This is a difficult balance between, on the one hand, recognizing that sometimes things are not working and you have to change policy, but often policymakers underestimate the complexity and institutional disruption that is caused when policy is changed. And so often we throw the baby out of the bathwater. And let me be clear, there are certainly areas where policy has to change, it must change, and should change, but often the institutional impact that those changes have is underestimated. The second area that we've outlined is what's called organizational instability. Often new ministers appoint new officials, and there's a cascading downwards, The worst example is the Eastern Cape Education Department that has had, I think, 13 different heads of department in 17 years. It's hard to develop experience and continuity in an environment where there's such rapid change and turnaround. And then there's capacity and skills issues. Now, here, the capacity and skills constraints we're talking about are not at the top of the civil service. They're not TGs, DBGs, senior managers. They're in the middle of the beast, if I can use that expression. Water engineers, prosecutors, ICU nurses, theater nurses, forensic specialists, detectives, pilots in the military. It's very specific skill sets that the country has got significant shortages of, and the public sector has got even worse shortages of, and that is compromising service delivery. The eighth area is that in the view of the Commission, corruption levels are high and have probably increased in the last decade. Now, often we try to separate what would be dinner time conversation, that corruption levels are high, to the evidence. And so we interviewed the Special Investigative Unit, the Financial Intelligence Center, SARS, the Auditor General, the Accountant General, the Public Service Commission, the Organized Crime Unit of the police, to try and paint a picture of the level of corruption, how it has changed since 1994. And in our view, corruption levels are high and have probably increased in the last decade. It's particularly high at provincial and municipal level, but even some national departments are afflicted. The most problematic area is the procurement system and supply chain management. We cite several examples or reasons for this. In our view, that you have a combination. On the one hand, there's weak accountability within the public service and weak systems of governance. On the other hand, you've got a breakdown of ethics and values in society and the private sector. And those two combine to contribute towards high levels of corruption. And to make the obvious point that the poor are the biggest losers in this, because somehow in richer areas, when you build a school, the school gets built in poorer areas. The quality of the school seems to be shoddy. And that's a particular problem, both related to the way in which we manage procurement, but also the impact of corruption on the procurement system. The ninth diagnostic feature that we outline is that while we have made significant progress since 1994 in building an inclusive, non-racial, non-sexist society, South Africa still remains a divided society, and race is still the main division. Other significant fault lines include the rich and poor, men and women, the employed and employed, the language divide, urban, rural, workers and bosses, skilled and unskilled workers, importers and exporters, etc. We're still a fragmented society in some ways. In conclusion, Chair, in our view, the next 30 years has to be a balance between economic development and social equity. One without the other is not sustainable. Let me run through some of the specific water issues that the diagnostic report covers, and then Commissioners Muller and Molwantwa can give you a bit more of a sense of the process in these areas going forward. The water section, I guess, focuses on two areas: water supply and sanitation services, what's called the water in the pipes and then the water in the rivers. What the diagnostic report outlines is that the water sector is probably one of the most complex intergovernmental sectors in our government. For various reasons, the institutional arrangements in the water sector are more complex than in almost any other area: electricity, education, policing, you name it. It's a complex institutional arrangement. On the water in the pipe side, we've made good progress since 1994. We've expanded services to the poor, and that's helped women. The free basic water package is part of the social wage. It's been a progressive policy move by government. There are key challenges, however: where to focus investment, Do we grow rural corridors? The issue of density in rural areas and providing adequate water provision to rural areas is a significant challenge. How does water play a role in contributing towards the rural development strategy? And our new rural development strategy is not just focused on land redistribution and restitution. It's also focused on earnings, employment, living standards, livelihoods in rural areas. And water plays a significant role for that. There's the municipal mandates and issues around the relationship between bulk water provision and reticulation. There's difficult policy issues about flush toilets and VIPs. And then we found that government has under-maintained waste treatment plants, water treatment plants, sewage plants, and so we've had, on the one hand, the capacity and access to provision, on the other hand, poor maintenance, partly because of fiscal constraints, but partly because of short-termism in municipal government. You know, they can get away with not maintaining the sewage plant for 2 or 3 years. They use the money to fund something else, and then 3 years later, there's a huge bill. I've mentioned issues around maintenance, but also skills in the water sector, inadequate personnel, and poor governance. Lastly, on the water resource issues, the resource challenges are known. There's issues of variability. It's a limited resource. And impacts of climate change. There's pollution from municipalities, from informal settlements, but also from mines and industry. Growing demands both from mines and industry, agriculture and the household sector. There's this move to more conservation and reuse. While South Africa still needs water infrastructure, and in particular needs water infrastructure in certain areas, the rates of return to better managing the resource are likely to rise in the future, and therefore there has to be a balance between building bricks and mortar and putting in place the human systems to manage the human and technological systems to manage the resource. Water resource management challenges include impacting on economic activities. The Department of Water has got a fairly sophisticated planning system. We must say much more sophisticated than most other areas of public policy. The IRP2 is a recent incarnation, but in the water sector they've been doing long-term planning much longer than most other government departments. The issue of intergovernmental coordination in the water sector is a concern. The priority projects such as the Lesotho Highlands water projects, the Moy Mgeni transfer, and then issues around the verification of water use and licensing are all issues that are being raised. Just quickly on some of the environmental issues, the Planning Commission is doing extensive work on what we call the transition to a low-carbon economy. How do we manage the transition? What are the instruments we use? What pace do we transition? How do we cushion labor-intensive sectors such as the gold mining sector, for example, from these instruments? What's the appropriate energy mix going forward? And the IRP2 begins to answer some of those areas, using water and then other natural resources, issues around soils, oceans, biodiversity more sustainably. While the climate and water are two of the most high-profile environmental issues, issues about biodiversity and soil quality are also issues raised in the report. We also think that the environmental issues must be tackled from a regional perspective. Again, while South Africa is a water-scarce country, some of our neighbors are not. And similarly, we share catchment regions with our neighbors, and that requires us to take a regional perspective. And to point out that environmental sustainability is key to the needs of the economy in the future. Lastly, Chair, some of the future work of the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission, after the 11th of November, we will do detailed work on two or three areas in our list of 11 each year. So each year we'll take two or three areas and do detailed work. And while we've not formally agreed with the President what those would be, the Minister would like included in that potential list is issues around food security, water security, and climate change. There are specific areas, as I mentioned, the transition to a low-carbon economy. We've been interacting with the departments of environmental affairs and other government departments, but we've also been interacting with business, unions, civil society, NGOs on this. Looking at implementation capacity in various areas, alignment of the national conservation priorities, water licensing, pricing, rights and allocations issues, accelerating sanitation provision, issues around groundwater and that is a potential source of water, doing the cost-benefit analysis on that, capacity building and skills in the water and environmental sector, and then potential PPPs in the environment area. So, Chair, that's it. Maybe if I can just run to the last slide. At the moment, the Commission is in what we call a listening phase. We've presented this diagnostic report, but more importantly, we would like to hear what people think are the solutions. We've met with several government departments and ministries, and we've invited both written and verbal input from departments. And we're very much involved in the listening phase. I guess that will probably last for another month or so before we start to pull together what we will be able to release in November. Thanks.
If we take it straight from here, and welcome
and
to
if
Jennifer.
If you want to add something, if you want to add something to what Mr. Nader said, then do that so that we can then engage.
No, I think we should actually go into the discussion. Let's hear some more. I mean, I take your question, but perhaps if we can just engage first with the diagnostic that's been presented. We had assumed you would want to talk about what needs to be done going forward, but you know, the very important purpose of the diagnostic was to give ourselves a base from which to start. And a lot of people have turned around and said, this diagnostic doesn't actually say much new. But the fact that it had resonance, that we've had confirmation of its contents, that people say, yes, this is more or less where we are at the moment, is actually a very important point. You don't go forward without understanding where you're coming from. So I think it is necessary for us to confirm where we're starting from as we go forward. No, I know I'm not. I'm making the point.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. I think we do note the point that you have made on what is going to be in the plan in terms of water and the environment. But I think what the diagnostic shows is, like Mike said, is issues that we will actually be addressing. For example, when we, on the future work, what the NPC will be looking at, specific to the environment, on the how to get to transition to a low carbon economy. For example, we've had workshops where we are engaging stakeholders, and members of the department have been also attending this. And together we are drawing inputs that will get into the plan to get us into, you know, how do we transition and what will be, how we intend to face it in what we have been doing currently and facing in new things. So it will be in responding largely to the big issues as we have raised them on your issues of supply, on your issues of management of our resources.
Okay, they're still listening. Can I suggest we first deal with water issues and then with environment? Okay? So we keep them. Okay, Mr. Morgan, then Mr. Matebe, and Mr. Sosa.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Commission for its presentation. I'm also just very keen to sort of have a discussion, because I think, as you said, you're on a listening trip, and there's something on the table at the moment. But one of the ways you can also help us is to talk us through all the steps that the NPC plans to go through over the current years. Now, what I mean by that is the diagnostic report is on the table, and well done for that. I take the point that there's not really anything new, but I also take the point that you kind of have to start with something. So I think it's a remarkably refreshing report, and generally a good account of where we are, both successes and challenges. So congratulations on that. I, from my personal point of view, I don't think there's particularly anything that I would necessarily add to that diagnostic report, particularly with regards to water. The relevant themes, I think, are well encapsulated in this particular area. But the next part I want to say is really, and this is why I need you to talk us through where you're going on this, because we're a committee which is familiar with the water sector, and the Chair has asked us to focus on water, but we could equally do it on environment in a little while. And we've quite considered opinions, both I think collectively and individually, on what the challenges are and what some of the solutions are. Now, there is, as you all know, a new work going on the National Water Resources Strategy as we speak at the moment, which I guess is the reconciliation, what is available and what needs to be found, and we'll be looking at the various ways to obviously make more water available, whether it be through reuse or recycling, and the rest. What I really need you as the NPC to engage with us is firstly the vision. Okay, now I know you're going to get there and you're probably working on it already and adjusting it. Is it a vision in the sense as you would find in a corporate statement for the country, or is it a vision for the various subsectors which you have highlighted, or is it both? Then the next thing is, and I understand, and if you could be quite frank with us, I mean, you said you're not actually the implementer. You pull things together, you intend to offer advice in the future. The big thing with me with the water sector, from a point of view of some of the challenges and the risks that you have highlighted, and let me put it on the table, is that there are many great people in the water department, and I think there is a lot of good work going on, particularly with regards to planning. It could be better, we all know that. But one of the fundamental problems is that it is a department which tends to follow a lot more of water resources in South Africa. And let me just tell you what I mean by that. There is, and it's a thing we talk about in this committee fairly often, there are a huge amount of projects in South Africa, which, and I think particularly of the big energy and mining, and they are linked together, the so-called minerals energy complex of South Africa. And so often, the major augmentation programs as well are focused on the provision of water to those. Now, I understand there's importance to that, you have to drive the economy. But what the bigger thing is, and this is where you really need to, I know you can't give us specifics, but I'd like you to talk us through some of the thinking of how you're going to work on this. The true global look on economy means the decisions made in one sector, like energy, or like the push to mine, basically, which is very, very prominent in Minister Patel's new growth path, has substantial effects on other sectors. And this is where I'm talking about the lead and the follow. So the push to mine and the push for coal for a considerable period of time means that it has an effect on water. So how is it, as an MP, as a planning commission, of course, do you, without being the political decision makers, actually balance that? Because, of course, on the other hand, as you said, the water and the pipes issue, there are large stretches of, for example, the Eastern Cape, which don't have access to water within the suggested guidelines. And so it's managing that and not being trapped into particular futures by decisions that are being made now, which most concern me. And that is why I think you can only do what you can do. I accept that. But there is, of course, a timing problem here, which I think should be acknowledged as a risk in your document. And that is that certain decisions being made now actually are effectively going to tie your future actions at this point, even though you haven't, as an NPC, done your vision yet. And I'm not being judgmental here. So, for example, Medupi, Kusile. I'm not saying good or bad. I'm just saying decision now, which is a big draw of water for the future and big use of carbon. And the IRP2, big project, separate, quite frankly, from the NPC, with some design on what the future will look like in 2030. So I'm not asking you, all I'm asking you to do is to basically comment or agree or disagree with me on the risks of the program, because I'm a big supporter in what you guys are doing. I think the global look at an economy is exactly the right way to go. But there's certain decisions now, which, to summarize, which I think trap you, or trap us, let's say, let's all take ownership of this, and there are certain sort of political dynamics which also make some departments more junior or more senior to others. So if you could comment on that and to comment on what the vision statement is, and then give us some, talk us through a little bit when you say we're going to focus on food security, climate change, and water security. I know that's what could happen. I know the President might disagree with that. But what does it mean in practice? What does it mean that that work could entail without trying to preempt the outcomes of it? Thank you, Chair, for indulging me.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is on the workings of the Commission itself. I really appreciate the consultative process that the Commission is undertaking. But I believe not everybody, especially those in deep rural areas, are aware of the workings of this Planning Commission. Now, my question is, how do you make yourself known and consult this vulnerable sector of our society? I imagine you cannot base your research on the reports that you receive from various municipalities. You have to satisfy yourself. You have to have first-hand information on the plight of these rural poor and also gather views on different issues. Now, how do you undertake this process? Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, let me thank the Commission to give us this important input. And I must say, the input that has been made here is real. It's what all of us we know within our country of what is happening, in fact. But Chairperson, mine is I just want to know, after the Department of Planning, of National Planning Commission, has identified issues, what are they doing with those issues? Well, there is a problem. For instance, you have got a problem of a scattered settlement. Then what next do you do as a department in order to address that? Or what, in fact, where do you take this information to? Because the problem must be addressed. It can't just be identified. And secondly, Chairperson, I want to know more about resources. Is there any planning in terms of mobilizing resources to address issues that we have in terms of delivery? Because the most important issue here is delivery vis-a-vis the resources. And also directly to water, on bulk water issues. I know the Planning Commission has identified that as a problem or as a challenge. Is there any recommendation or a plan to the department or in assisting the department to unlock that particular challenge? Lastly, Chairperson, the shortage of water, I should think, in our country, it's almost everywhere, particularly in rural areas. As this Planning Commission department, I just want to know, are they looking to these rural areas of how to address these challenges or not? And I know, Chairperson, their thinking or their planning, it must be coupled with the planning of the Department of Water Affairs. On climate change issues, Chairperson, no, I'm still waiting. Maybe we'll be getting more information. I can't watch now because I didn't hear so much dealing with the climate change per se, and also the issues that are touching COP17 that will be taking place in Durban this year. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. First, I also appreciate the MPC's presentation. I think this MPC engaged for the guideline to the water department. I'd like to hear from I think the 18 DG is here. I'd like from the water department can show to us how they can get this guideline from the MPC then involved in the strategic plan. Because this one now, you're talking for the municipality water level. This capacity, how you can build in the capacity for the municipality, this infrastructure for the water infrastructure. I think it's a lot of issue for this water rate and this debit from this municipality, all the lot of money from the department. So from your MPC side, yes, I'm looking you like the professional for the this guideline to this department. But I can't see this presentation inside more detail. How sort out this problem? Because a lot of guideline is issued inside the problem. Yes, you also say you highlight the draft of the vision for statement for the 2011-11-11. But you also highlight this, you want to draft the vision of statement for the 2030. This after 19 years. After 19 years, I think many people know this, also in underground, so we don't know. This long term, I like to say, the government make a long term, yes. Long term will be 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. But you're talking to the after 20 years. Even now, now it is a crisis for all the water crisis for the municipality level. I think there's a lot of issues. Last workshop, we talked in how many municipalities all the money for this water issue. And this is how you can capacity for this building for municipality level. This water infrastructure. I'm more concerned for like this. So I hope can get this more detail. If you want to release this statement, the provision statement for this year, November 11, like talking 11-11-2011. Yeah. I bet that's good. At least one everybody can remember. It's too many 11. I want to see your 11 release. Yeah. Your document that can show to the committee is how you from the your MPC can assist to the to the water department and environment. Then from the from committee side, we know is how can oversight to the water department. For the reason, this is all the effect for their duty and their job here. So I also thank you for your lot of input and the information to the committee. Thank you.
If I can start, and I think if Ben can come in, particularly on the consultation and the process of getting out throughout the country and not just amongst the group who normally talk to themselves, as Mr. Tepe asked. On the first question, I think the phrase was used about lock-in, about how the Commission is at risk that by the time we come to report, all sorts of decisions will be taken to build power stations or to build dams that will then not be able to be changed and will be locked in. And in fact, that's been one of the sort of key concerns that we have in this process. We certainly can't, we don't have any mandate to interfere with the sectoral planning of individual government departments. We are an advisory committee. But if we see actions that are being taken or proposals that are being made that could lock us into a particular direction, then that does become our role. So rather perhaps than talk about the water directly, it's interesting to look at the process about energy planning, because the IRP2 raises actually one of the six issues that is considered when deciding on the future of electricity is water, the water use of power stations. One of the others is the impact on the Southern African regional economy. And those were in fact the key concerns that we raised. We said, what is the implication if you go ahead? Are you going to disturb the water availability to the rest of the country? Have you used the regional opportunities to their full advantage? And are we locking out particular opportunities by following this route? And that perhaps is the value that we can bring. Chair, that brings us to the National Water Resource Strategy, which you mentioned. You know, we actually specifically said in the diagnostic we were worried because we learned from the electricity experience that departments that aren't planning on a structured, regular basis run into trouble. And the whole point of having a statutory National Water Resource Strategy required in the Act is so that every 5 years you do a plan, you review the situation, you tell people where we stand, and you take the decisions for the next 5 years. So it was a concern that that planning process hadn't happened. This is the opposite of lock-in. You can be locked in or you can be locked out. And if you don't do your planning, you're in danger of being locked out. And whereas the resource planning is in place, the institutional and the management plans that need to be associated with it, Mr. Huang's point, who is going to do this work once it's being identified, we saw that as a systemic risk, not just to the water sector, but to all the sectors that need to use water. So I think that we have to be very careful not to trespass on the territory of individual departments. We have to be very clear that we have an intersectoral view and we will look at what one sector does and see what its impact will be on another. And then we also need perhaps sometimes to blow the whistle where action isn't being taken. Now, there is an agreement between the NPC and the department to support the process of the National Water Resource Strategy when it gets underway. And, you know, we're following the process and we know that the document is almost ready to be released for consultation, which would be wonderful, because then we can be part of the process of discussing it with all the many stakeholders, from the farmers to the power industries to the municipalities to the environmental interests, to say, does this make sense and is what's proposed feasible and likely to be implemented over the next 5 years? So that would be our role, would be in fact a supportive role to the department, to help the department perhaps bring in some of the stakeholders who might be more resistant, which I have to say we've done on the energy side. On the energy side, there has been consultation, for instance, with the mining sector, which has been in part facilitated by other commissioners who have particular knowledge in that area. But we are very concerned about lock-in and as well as lock-out. Lock-out through not taking action, lock-in through taking action.
I could go on to other areas, but I'm not sure. Jennifer, do you want to add on some of the water areas and then ask Kuben to just talk about the consultation?
Thanks, Mike. I think that we've already alluded where does the information go to? You know, the fact that we have got an advisory role has been indicated. And the issue of resources to address the issues of delivery, we have taken cognizance of the point of the fact that there will be sufficient training that is required. And as part of in the plan, we do indicate that there will be a requirement to for financial resources, not so much, you know, when we mention skills, we always say people need to be trained, but, you know, the financial resourcing of that, we also highlight that. For example, the acceleration of the catchment management agencies, that's another issue that we intend to focus on. In terms of the rural areas, we have also looked at the understand that we need to unlock the groundwater potential that we have in the country, and this will obviously, the implementation thereof to supply water to the rural areas will require a lot of training or skilled people who will be able to maintain and operate the supply of groundwater. And also on that issue, we do mention a lot of training. Okay, I think I then just hand to Kuben on the consultation.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few things. Let me answer the question from Dr. Huang first. On how would what we do help departments? And I think that's quite an important question. Our task is to try and provide fairly high-level strategic guidelines and guidance to departments that would help inform their plans. What that means in practice, for example, is if we say, by 2030, from the demographic modeling that we've done, we think South Africa would have X number of people. We think that urban areas are likely to have X number of people, rural areas, Y number of people. We think that based on demand forecasts, we would need so much of water. These are the food requirements. These are the energy requirements, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, there are choices and trade-offs embedded in that. We will then confront some of those choices and energy and trade-offs. For example, in the water sector, there is clearly tension between the use of water in mining versus the use of water for agriculture, for example. We would be able to provide policy frameworks and guidelines that would enable the department to take decisions that help inform that. The pricing of water is a critical issue because it's a scarce resource, it must be priced properly, reflecting its scarcity. But at the same time, we've got a social obligation to provide adequate water to the poor who might not be able to afford the water if it's priced properly. We also know that if water is priced properly, it might impact on food prices, and that's a concern too. And so I think our task is to provide an overarching, cross-cutting framework to be able to enable those kinds of decisions to be made on an informed basis, taking account the evidence and taking account what other sectors are also doing and how that fits in. What is the vision? It's very much a vision statement for the country. It would have elements that would inform subsectors in terms of policy, but so maybe the answer to the word both is probably most accurate. But we see it as a vision statement for the country. We've been quite deliberate about this approach. Some countries have a vision statement of putting a man on the moon. Some countries have a vision statement about achieving a particular level of GDP per capita. We've been quite explicit that our elements of the vision statement must talk to the nature of the democratic state, must talk to the services that people are going to get, must talk to the livelihoods that people are likely to experience, especially the poor. And that's how we see the vision statement. We're going out of our way to try and consult with rural communities, to consult with communities in far-flung areas, to consult with young people in particular, to consult with people in various languages. We've translated the diagnostic document into all 11 languages and Braille. We've been to all 9 provinces, and in most of those provinces we've been able to interact with community-based organizations, NGOs, etc. But we accept that we are not able to do what they did during the drafting of the Constitution, where they were able to embark on a process that effectively received 2 million submissions. We don't have that capacity. And so while we're trying very hard to consult, to go into to the most far-flung parts of the country to talk about the diagnostic disease, we accept that our consultative process is limited, more limited than we would like it to be, because of the nature of the constraint and the time factor. What are we going to do with the issues? I think our task in the diagnostic report is to try and get a broad common consensus on what the key challenges facing South Africa are. Our task now is to try and provide a high-level plan to deal with those challenges. So what we would table on the 11th of November would be a detailed, a fairly high-level plan, detailed in some areas, on how we would deal with that. In subsequent years, we will do much more detailed work on specific areas. So let's take the transition to a low-carbon economy as an example. Is it possible to achieve the President's commitments that he made in Copenhagen? Our task is to see what instruments we would use. Is it possible? Who's the winners? Who's the losers? How do you phase this in? How do you cushion the labor-intensive sectors? How do you cushion the poor in that? What instruments would we use? How would you price? Where does a price for carbon fit in? What's the nature of incentives that we would need to provide? Can you get a broad consensus among the key players, government, business, labor, civil society, about the transition to a low-carbon economy? That work is not likely to be finished by November the 11th. What we would outline by November 11th is the ambition, the key vision, the targets, what we think the overall direction would be. But the detailed work that we would have to do to try and figure out exactly how we transition to a low-carbon economy is likely to take at least another year or two. And that's consistent with what the white paper that Cabinet looked at on the climate change response paper. It gives 2 years for sectoral strategies to transition. And so that's how I think we're likely to make progress. The last question, Chair, is on mobilizing resources for delivery. The diagnostic report in general was of the view that resources were not our major challenge. In fact, the only place where the diagnostic document says that we think more resources might be used was in the health sector. There isn't any other area where we thought resources were the major constraint. I'm not saying it's not a constraint, and I'm not saying that resources are adequate. However, in the view of the Commission, we didn't think resources were the major constraint.
I want to say to you that I've been around government now for a while, like all of us, since 94, and I'm very appreciative of the National Planning Commission and what it's doing, and I'm a very strong supporter of it. I was a stronger supporter of it a little bit in another form, but okay, it's in the present form. And I do understand the difficulties of the Commission. Being a structure outside of government, being an advisory structure, and therefore the things that Mr. Miller is saying, be careful, you know, you don't want to start interfering with the partners. The problem with this is that we have to be careful. Let me not say it's a problem. Let me say the thing that we have to be careful of is that if we're too careful, we're going to become just another talk shop that's going to regurgitate. Somewhere we have to ask the tough questions. And the Commission has to ask the tough questions. Now, I'm again fully supportive of starting the process you have through a diagnostic. But somewhere we have to, and I'm now just talking of the water sector. You see, there are a lot of us, me included, that say, look, we have done a lot of bad policies in this country. The issue is really implementation. And in the whole, that's mostly correct, but it's not always correct, not in all instances. The problem is we accept it as a shoe that fits all. It's not the case. I think in the water sector, for example, They are very tough questions, as Mr. Morgan was saying. We have now engaged since November last year very much on policy issues with this department, literally on a weekly basis. And we've gone for a whole week sitting in Pretoria to engage with them. And I think that if we don't put some of the tough questions on the table for us to discuss, not in the form of, you know, giving, saying this must be done, but in the form of actually coining and drafting those, what are the issues that we have to look at, I think we're going to actually get stuck in the same rut. Because if departments are insular and they are the ones that keep driving the processes, as obviously they have to do, and if the commission doesn't come there and see itself at least as raising the tough issues and letting the departments at least say, well, what we've got is good enough, or maybe we should. If we don't do that, then November we're going to get another, I think, a lukewarm response to lukewarmly deal with some of the issues in some of the departments. Maybe in some of them you're going to go further. So, you know, and luckily we've got a minister that's engaging on this stuff. I mean, I've sat with her this morning about these issues, and I know she's engaging about it. But the point is, we should put these issues, if you want to consult with people, we should know what we're consulting on, what are the issues we actually want responses on. If people want to say all other things, that's fine. But there are some things that we have to put on the table. So, for example, the whole constitutional legal framework that we have that deals with water, what are we saying about it? Is it good enough? Can we tweak it? Can we not tweak it? I mean, basically at the moment, as I see it, it's really a national government-driven process, but huge functionalities are at the local level of dealing with water, infrastructure, the provision, and so on and so on. And somewhere in between, we've created other institutions. Now, the point is that whole framework an adequate one for us? You have to start with that discussion in water, because else we're not going to address all these issues that you found are the problems in the statement. What is the issue? Are we just going to take more of what we've got now, just create more capacity, do it a bit better, let the department function a bit better, try and reduce corruption to some extent? Or are we actually going to start challenging some of those issues? So for me, you know, those things have to be put on the table. You know, more and more, if you look at, and I'll raise it just now in another context, at the department, the fragmentation in the water sector is huge. Now, to what extent does that fragmentation help us achieve our objectives? Or, if we have to have that fragmentation, we come to the conclusion at the end that the legal constitutional framework is correct, what mechanisms do we do put in place to coordinate and manage that fragmentation? That we have a seamless, even if it's at different levels of government, how do you create seamless single projects to be able to achieve certain things? I mean, if you sit here, that we sit here, we went sat with the water boards. I mean, it's actually scary when you hear some of the things. I mean, water boards sitting with huge amounts of money in reserve, Mgeni Water, for example. Why? Well, if they every year put their projects on the table, they budget for it. But when it comes to time of producing it, they find out that the municipality, which has to provide the infrastructure from where they end to tap, that they don't have a budget for it. So here you sit in government with huge amounts of money for infrastructure and very simple things that we haven't looked at a centralized infrastructure plan from source to tap and how that is created and what mechanisms and what protocols do we put in place to make that work. And if it doesn't work, what interventions do we allow ourselves at the moment? I mean, if we don't look at those issues, I really think we're not going to get anywhere with this discussion. It's just going to be more of the same. We're giving more and more of these functions to local government, and local government is the most dysfunctional part of government, with the least capacity to do certain things. Is this the way to go in the water sector? If we don't ask those questions, don't force water department to engage with them, because, I mean, clearly, the Department of Water also have certain interests to do certain things in a certain way because they've done it for millions of years and so they want to keep doing it for millions of years. So, you know, that is it. I mean, new sources of water. I mean, what are we saying about this? What are the new sources? Are they reuse? Are they AMD? Are they desalination? What is it we're saying about new water? I mean, and what are we going to put towards achieving that? What are our plans with it? I mean, the department actually now has got 7 reconciliation studies they've done, where the water is being used, what is needed, and so on. I mean, to take that and to build on it and to create this 20-year plan around water, it's very vital that those questions are asked, that the water department is asked to put ideas on, and that you interrogate and then we interrogate them. It's very vital that we get those. But you see, those questions are not put in this document at all. So come June, come 11-11-11, I think, you know, either you guys are going to come with your own plans, because Mike is there and this young lady is there. They have certain ideas about it. They may then have certain ideas, but it's the department, the one that we've taken along with us. And we're going to, in any case, then get a conflict or get a weak response in the end. This whole fragmentation of the infrastructure plans, a lot of it's got to do with funding. Now, there are simple decisions that can be taken. At the moment, Treasury, under Kuban and those guys that devised these plans, give local government their money on the basis of the, what's that thing called, equitable share. That equitable share says this amount of money is for water. Do you know that local government doesn't spend that money on water? They'll spend it on anything else. On anything else, salaries, on anything else. So what is happening? Treasury says up here, this money is for water. It gives them the money to them in a form that they can do what they want to. And then what do we have? I can show you. I've got figures here of the water boards, how much money the municipalities own them. So our whole plan on infrastructure in those areas where there are water boards is based on the fact that Treasury gives money up there through the equitable share, doesn't have any obligation to spend it on that, and what do you have? Billions and billions of rands of arrears. And especially in the poorer areas, those arrears can't translate into new infrastructure. Now, you know, there it is a question of getting Treasury to change their ways of how they're giving money for water. And, you know, a conditional grant, for example, is a much better way of doing it, and to make sure that money gets spent on water, and if it doesn't, you know. So that whole fragmentation of the system, if we're going to keep it like that, which I probably will have to, I mean, the spending patterns, there are basic changes we have to make in government. I mean, when I asked Treasury the first time, well, why don't you do anything about that, they said, no, it's unconstitutional. So I said, what's unconstitutional? They say, no, the equitable share is... I say, but the point of Treasury, you made a decision that the money to local government for water must be in the equitable share. If you equally made the decision it must be part of a conditional grant, what is the problem? There's no constitutionality, no legality attached to it. It's a decision that was made by Treasury. It's a policy decision that was made that has to be changed. Now, if we don't put those issues on the table... Because clearly local government are going to shout their heads off when you hear that. But it has to change. If it doesn't change, we'll just have more. So those questions are there. The whole licensing legal framework, chapter whatever it is, chapter 6, 7, what? That's the whole chapter on licensing. Yeah. Now, you know, the problem with this, you know, some of the work that the commission should, they should go down and engage some of these sectors. Actually engage the sectors, and you see what we're trying to do to get water licensing done, and then to translate it into new allocations. Because as you know, the allocations, 97-98% of allocations have been made. But the law allows us to go make reallocations. What are we doing? Because the Act said we must work out those people that what allocations they had at the time of the 2-year period after the Act came into them. Now they're sitting trying to look at satellite photos of how much land was being used, how much to try and work out how much water they had. I mean, it's something that's passed us by. It's 10 years later. We didn't make the 2 years. So the whole legal framework around relicensing is completely and utterly outdated. I mean, if we don't challenge the department to see that and to change it, I mean, the whole premise of the Act is premise on the basis that you can go make reallocations. To do the reallocations, you have to work out what people had and so on. But that shouldn't be the way we're doing it. There's very simple ways that you can do and change that whole system. So if we don't ask those questions, we don't. You know, we had a wonderful input from that man sitting at the end of the table, Friend for Sale.
around the attainment of the MDGs in the water sector. A wonderful, if I suggest anything, have a look at that. Let him give that input to you. And he'll show you how we've attained the MDGs up to, for the last about 2, 3, 4 years. Suddenly it's flattened off. They ascribe, and I've asked them to redo the document. I'm still waiting for Fred to do it. Maybe he'll do it in this, my lifetime still. He'll maybe redo the document. But they gave us some of the reasons that they think that has happened, that we were able to achieve it and then it's flattened off. And but some of it's got to do exactly with some of the functionality being given to other departments. So suddenly it's not a priority. There's no budget. There's no centralized planning for it. There's nothing. So you, now suddenly we're flattening off with it. Now, those are the questions we have to ask. The tasks that were outsourced or given to these other departments, was it a correct decision? Or if it was a correct decision, how do we make sure that they get on the right path again? You know, those are the tough issues. The whole governance framework we have, that we have these structures like water boards and CMAs, where who I may say in some instances do a really good job. But what we've done in the process, the model itself, is a model where you create separate and independent boards that are delivering on very basic water services. That's the model we agreed to. And what we do is we take the people that have interest in water at the ground level and we put them in these boards. So you institutionalize the potential for conflict around water issues in your boards. And you then say these are the structures that are going to run. I mean, is this a correct way of us doing this thing? I mean, is this the best way that we draw in people with interest around water? So, you know, these are the tough questions we have to ask. I mean, I'm not now saying whether it's right or one way or the other, but if we don't ask those questions, there's some people that want a regulator of water. I'm totally and utterly opposed to it, but other people want it. You know, that's a policy decision. That's going into the future, that, you know, where we want to go with these things. This whole thing that there's a huge sector of municipalities that are totally outside of the system as far as infrastructure. They don't fall in a water board area, and they don't contract with a water board. They just decide what they want to and how they provide infrastructure. In the I mean, these are fundamental questions. I think if we don't address them in this NPC, we're not going to have a proper plan into the 20 years. So I just wanted to say in summary, you know, for me, I respect all the things that you're saying about, you know, you want to be very careful how you do your job, you want to do it properly, you carefully don't want to, but I think that at some level, there's a way of doing these things without necessarily trampling on toes. It is by asking and putting the right issues for that has to be addressed. I don't think that the diagnostic does that. It finds what the problems that you see today. And no one, I mean, I can't think of thinking of one word that I want to have any difference with in the diagnostic. But for me, it doesn't ask, in the water sector, it doesn't ask the tough questions. It doesn't ask the questions we want this department to address. It may come, they may come back and say, no, we're happy with this, and that's fine, and we can debate it or not debate it. But at least we must have those put on the table for discussion that it forms part of the 11-11-11 document, you know. So, and then, you know, for me, this issue of mining. You know, you identify that we're very dependent on resources, and we are. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But if we don't tackle this issue of how we deal with mining head on, then all that is going to come to nothing. Because, I mean, what is our attitude? Our attitude is mining is the one place that creates work, so let's give licenses. Let us secondary look at the environmental impact to it, and let us look secondly at the sustainability of it, and so on. You know, I really think the whole issue, I mean, you know, for me, as a new person in this sector, these two departments have sat down and with this parliament they've made agreements that the environmental issues will come back to environment and not be, I mean, it's like, you know, Afrikaans, they say, you maak wolf skaapwagter. You make the wolf, you make them the sheep herder. So the wolf is both the wolf and is the sheep herder. You know, we're doing it in the issue of mining. If you put mining and environmental issues to be decided in the same department, you're going to have a disaster, a huge disaster. I mean, every decision that's taken, environment is not featuring because there's no one in that department that looks at environment. So,
the issue of mining and how we deal with it and what parameters and how we're going to plan it. I mean, it must be put up front in this diagnostic. I mean, what are the issues we have to ask ourselves? Is it just going to be... So, you know, what I'm really asking to the Commission is if you want to help us, we'll do our work in any case. These issues I've raised, we've identified in the year, and we're engaging with the department. But the point is, if you in your diagnostic and you in your further engagement with the rest of society don't put these issues on the table as far as the water sector is concerned, then they're just going to talk about the system as it exists now. And that, I think, in the water sector, in any case, I do not think is necessarily has all the answers at the moment. I think that we've tried certain things. I think they're not working. From Treasury side, from this department side, from other department side in this sector, and from local government. And we have to put those things squarely on the table to discuss. And you as a commission has to help us do it in a way without trampling necessarily on the toes. I mean, I think the best way to do it is to sit down with every department. And here you have a former DG at least that knows some of the aspects of this department, and sit down and put those large questions on paper and say, all of us, we say these are the issues we're addressing in water. Okay, so anyone, is there any follow-up on water before we get to environment? Water? Mr. Tetsi?
In relation to the challenges in relation to water resource issues, looking at the Commissioner's world of knowledge and expertise here, there's no one with the legal expertise. What is the reason? Understanding from the input of the Chairperson on constitutional...
I think they think that lawyers are such a problem that if you've got one lawyer, you've got three opinions. Mr. Morgan?
Thanks, Chair. Just on the water sector, that's an issue I raised with Deputy Minister Godangwana earlier on in the year. And that is with regards to working out a kind of index of GDP units per whatever unit of water, basically. The one of the, I might make more comments on the environment section. But one of the things that I am most interested in coming out of this process, going from diagnostic into, as you said, what you're specifically going to work on, is the National Planning Commission being the sort of canary in the coal mine with regards to the so-called limits to growth. It's imperative, of course, that we grow. It's imperative that we create jobs, and it's imperative that we redress the injustices of the past. But there are certain barriers to growth which are inescapable, and those are, among other things, would be, you know, water, carbon, high potential soils, I guess our contributions to ozone depleting substances and a few others. And just to keep on the chair's focus now on water, we expect the Department of Water to continue on with their planning and licensing and all the rest of it. But what might be useful sometime in the future, I certainly wouldn't think we have to put a particular time limit on, is really someone being able to at least from a statistical point of view, even if it's done with the statistician general, is to work out what we are getting per unit of X. So GDP per water. Now I understand, you know, there's a kind of hierarchy of water. There's water for the ecological reserve. There's water for human well-being, human consumption, maintenance of productive lives and health. And then there's all the other ways we choose to use water. I would think that this kind of thing would be perfect from a planning point of view, because as you said, you know, you intend to maybe offer some guidance. The chair has urged you to ask some of the hard questions. But being able to also talk about the long-term growth potential of the economy from how we are allocating water and where we're allocating water and what the trends are is, I would think, a very, very important thing. Because we could, for example, make choices as a country. I don't know how we would implement it necessarily, but to actually produce more of our food, for example, in our neighboring countries, some of whom have higher annual rainfalls than we do, so they're better rain-fed agriculture. In the sense, we know that agriculture takes up 62% of our water, and we could argue, and this is somewhat hypothetical, that there are better ways to use some of that water. I'm not saying reduce it significantly, but that if there are ways to create jobs which where we can use water more productively, that is. So I'm sure it's very possible, and I would urge you to consider it, to look at the entire economy from a point of view of your GDP per unit, and look at it also in terms of, I'm scared to move on to the next subject because we'll do it, the kind of unit per carbon intensivity, where basically we reduce the amount of carbon per GDP unit over time. And I think that those kind of things would be very useful in terms of guiding and offering long-term ways to change the economy from a very compelling point of view. If you've thought of that, I'd love to hear your comments on that kind of proposal.
Anyone else on water? Okay, those are the last
ones. Thanks very much for those inputs, and they're helpful. And I think it's very encouraging for us that we can see that saying things that are tough and challenging and asking questions that are tough and challenging is what you see that we need, because I think that is our role, and it's good to have support when we play that role. Don't underestimate the extent to which we've done that in the diagnostic, and I'll give you the example following up on what you've said. You know, if the department had planned on time 3 years ago, a lot of these questions would have been addressed. We raised that in the diagnostic. We actually said, you're late. There's a statutory responsibility which you haven't complied with. So on some of those questions which you raised, they're actually there. They're perhaps a bit strategic and high level, and we haven't pointed the finger as hard as we could have. But similarly, a lot of the local government failures you talk about are actually addressed. We are very clear that unless local governance is improved, unless public sector performance at local government sector is improved, we can talk as much as we like in halls like this. We know it won't change because certain things will happen at local government level. We had indeed had that discussion about should we recommend changing the constitution, and in fact the discussion is starting today and it's carrying on tomorrow in the public service group, which is looking at that. So people are very concerned about that. They have raised local government performance as an absolute success factor. If we don't get it, things won't work. One of the things we also did, we said, and this is going to be developed further tomorrow, and it will be in the plan because we've already discussed it, we said there has to be some framework for regional utilities. And, it's a matter of history that the water sector has run some bets with the energy sector about who would have the first regional utilities. Would it be the Reds or would it be the voluntary regional utilities? And currently the water sector is winning because there are some places where local governments have said, let us establish together, cooperate, regional water utilities, like the boards, and maybe we have to adjust their governance. So I think we have addressed a couple of these issues, and I was just reminded by Jennifer further to that question. Our vice chair, Mr. Ramaphosa, has some legal experience and background. I think we're all barrack room lawyers, and I was about to have an argument with the advocate about the constitution, but I think we'll do that over tea. One of the other things that we need to say, which is perhaps let's say it's quite hard because it is said in the diagnostic. We must be very careful about policy change, or policy change for the sake of policy change. One of the defects that we've sort of identified has been policy inconsistency and lack of continuity. Now, as a retired DG, I have great fun traveling the world. Everyone wants to talk about South Africa's water policy and law. It's regarded as an absolute model. The only question they say is, why haven't you been able to implement it? And one of the concerns is that if you keep rediscovering the questions rather than addressing them, the one thing that we've told internationally is there is no one way to address water. It's done differently in many places. It's a very complex exercise. Don't talk too much about how to. Get on and do it. So I think that is the message that we get. You have a model. It's regarded by the rest of the world as a pretty workable model. The question people are asking is, why the hell don't you make it work? And I think that is one of the comments that we make, not just about the water sector, but about a lot of sectors of government where we've got good policy. The challenge is implementation. So I think we really appreciate the inputs, but I think it's important to draw attention that perhaps a bit too subtly and not strongly enough, we have actually pointed fingers at some of the issues. And I think around local government finance, I couldn't, you know, take that with Kuben sitting next to me. I mean, what you just said about the equitable share, the fight we used to have when we were both on other sides, those kind of issues are vital. One of the kind of mandate issues that we will be addressing is precisely, for instance, the mandate for financing wastewater treatment. We currently have identified that there is a mandate to the water and local government sector to provide low standards of sanitation, and the financing has been designed for that. Yet there's a clear democratic demand which says we want proper sanitation, we want flush toilets, we want waterborne sewage. So you have a disconnect between the formal financial mandate and the essentially democratic decision that we're going to provide a different level of service. Then you'll have wastewater going into the rivers without being treated. And that is certainly something that is going to be addressed in the plan, because it's been picked up as a problem. And we've had discussions with groups such as SALGA about this. And I think one of the great things about the Commission is that we have been able to draw in contributions from agencies, from SALGA all the way through to private sector organizations as well. So just lastly, on that question that you raised about licensing and do we talk to the people on the ground, the farmers who are stealing water from Lesotho Highlands water scheme at the moment are laughing at the department. They're saying, if you were to implement your licensing procedures that you had 10 years ago, we wouldn't be doing this. But because you're not actually proceeding to implement what you've got on the table, we see no reason not to take that water. And they are even preparing their defense for when the department goes and cuts them off. They've counted how many jobs they're getting with that illegal use of water, and they're ready to table it. So it is very interesting to talk to those sectoral groups. But it's those same sectoral groups who say, what we need is for the department to do the things it said it was going to do. So implementation within a frame of policy continuity, I think, is one of the sort of sub-themes that comes through the diagnostic. And I hope it's relevant in this sector as it is in some of the others. But excuse me, Chair, this is also the danger of being an ex-DG. You know, one depends on
turf. Yeah. No, I think, look, I mean, you know, I'm a bit worried is that we must be careful to try and say that, you know, everyone says we've got a wonderful policies and so on. The problem is, I would suggest that you come and sit with us here when we engage with the department. There's very clearly weaknesses with whatever we agree to and that UDG previously had agreed to, which doesn't mean it was bad, it doesn't mean that you were bad or the previous minister was bad. The fact of the matter is we tried certain things, and if that's not exactly working the way we anticipated, because remember, some of these things work now within three spheres of government, you couldn't anticipate the different things that would happen. But I think we must be careful, you know, to say that, well, we're scared to create policy, you know, imbalance and so on. I mean, there's not a question of creating policy imbalances for me. It's a question of, is it working? And if all of we agree that it's not working incorrectly, well, then we change it. Whether it's a policy, whether it's a strategy, whether it's a project, the fact of the matter is not. So we must be careful, this thing about we mustn't create policy instability and so on. I think that where the instability will come is if we keep going in this direction, not responding to things, not doing anything really in the department. Of course, the department's got other problems with leadership and so on that it had its difficulties that we're trying to sort out. But in the end of the day, these areas, if anyone can tell us these areas the committee has identified as problematic, that they're not problematic, I have showed me why it's not problematic, I'd say fine, great. But if you can't show us it's not problematic, and I don't care if it's a policy that was made by God or whoever it was made, but then it's not working for the people. And we can't just sit here and let it keep going. And I'm saying that the commission, has to put those tough issues on the table in a way that it's acceptable, that people can still debate them and so on. Okay? So please, let's just be careful with trying to hang on to things that maybe are not working anymore. And I know that's not necessarily your view, Mike, because I get your emails all the time.
some reason you send them to me, and I like reading what you say, and I agree with a lot of things you keep saying there, so I'm not necessarily saying that you are clinging to things. Mr. Naidu?
Chair, thank you for that. I think that's exactly what we needed to hear. You have a much more fine-grained view of the water sector than we would, looking at the level that we would. The issues you raise, from constitutional legal framework, fragmentation, centralized infrastructure planning, the diagnostic report that we table has got an overview chapter, which is 30 pages, 5 detailed chapters, each about 30 pages, and underlying that about 150 papers that we've referenced. On the water sector, we ask the questions, do the institutional arrangements work? Do we have sufficient planning capacity? What are the capacity issues in this sector in relation to skills and implementation? Where are the actual plans? Does the intergovernmental system support the delivery objectives in the water sector? Those are the questions that are asked in the diagnostic report. So they're not as sharply as...
very general.
Right?
Put your finger now. But
exactly, that's what we'd like to hear from you, and that's what we would like to hear from the department. Do we think the institutional arrangements work? What is the planning capacity, and where are the gaps? You know, that's what we would like to hear now. So we've asked the questions, we've got some views, but we would like to hear from you on what the...
Sharpen up. All right, environment. Any questions on environment? Dr. Kwan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's I want to agree for the Mr. Naidu. He was is the last comment, because from the Department of Water Affairs, it's not a reply and answer my question. How is the relationship with your MPC? Because you got a lot of questions from the other side, from his side. But my first question for beginning, I asking Water Affairs must be replied. How you can relationship with your MPC. But Chairperson, I think regarding for environment, I think now with we will be hosting for the COP17 for this year. I'd like to know from the MPC side how you can prepare your key role in this very important conference. Because it's I think a very high the ratio for the we say. We will be emission reduced 34% by 2020. Because your people like talking 2011, 2030, 2025. So I'd like to know, from your MPC side, this one is from our mission is the South America will be reduced this emission 34% by 2020, 42% by 2025. So this is after 15 years, 14 years. Yeah. So I like to hear from your MPC side how you can play this key role in this very crucial for this issue for this environment. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. On issues of the environment and realizing that these things are all by their very nature cross-cutting, I continue to wonder, and I've been wondering for 5 years, where the home in government is of the National Framework for Sustainable Development. It's an outcome of WSSD 2002. And there was an extensive program that came up with the strategy, it is by its very nature cross-cutting. Sustainable development is every government department's job. And there was extensive debate 2006, 2007 because of its cross-cutting nature where in fact it would be housed. It wasn't a presumption that it would would necessarily be with the Minister of Environment, who sits alongside other cabinet colleagues as a peer and not above them in any way. So could you provide us with some comments on where this is, where this particular framework is, and whether you are the home of it or going to be the home of it. It certainly makes sense to me personally that you would be very well placed to have that in your in the commission, because of course it, you know, it has got a global view of all the particular departments. Actually, I'll stop there, Chair. I might ask another one later.
Any other questions on environment? Any issues you want to engage on? No one? No one? Well, environment is actually...
What's the dominant?
It's one of those departments that run well, got everything going, and got a white paper for climate change. So there's not too much to fight about it yet. Except, of course, that issues raised about mining is very pertinent. If we do not in government sort it out, and I think it must be sorted out in this process of the NPC, then we will be tripping over our own people. We don't work out exactly how that synergy is going to be between water, between environment, and between mining. That will be an issue here that has to be highlighted very soon. Okay, any responses?
Okay. I think around COP17, I'll ask Ben just to come in on that. What we are certainly trying to do in the longer term, and I'm sorry, Dr. Huang, we are looking at 2030, but we are very concerned to understand the realities and the implications of trying to achieve targets. You know, the Copenhagen targets were set very clearly subject to financial and technical support, and they could be achieved with extensive financial and technical support. Minister Manuel sitting in Geneva, I thought he was doing climate work. I didn't realize he was doing rugby work, as the chair suggests.
He doesn't give interviews in New
Zealand. but, you know, he has some very specific interest in trying to make that financial transfer work, which would actually partly determine our ability to meet those targets in the longer run. Similarly, on this question of sustainable development, you know, as a participant over some years in the process, it is a bit of a club of ministers of environment. That's how it tends to operate. And I think if you see who goes to the Commission on Sustainable Development every year in New York, it tends to be environment and their associated departments like water and forestry and so on, which is arguably one of the reasons that it's not very effective. And arguably we should be looking at the roles of national planning agencies in sustainable development rather than treating sustainable development as an environmental niche activity. Certainly one of the roles of the NPC is to coordinate sustainability issues on a strategic front across government, and I think we're doing that quite successfully already with the engagements that we're having, for instance, with the mining and energy industries in the context of our current planning process, in the context of the climate change challenges. There's a lot happening within the framework of NPC, which I think shows that we could play that role. And one of the proposals that we'll be making going forward is that we should be engaging with our counterparts, at least in our neighboring countries, so that we can start having that regional planning discussion and regional sustainability discussion. Because if South Africa's water and soil resources are limited, the same is not true in our neighbors. And if we were to grow in a coordinated way, looking at the resources that we share as a region, we would have a very different picture and very much better opportunities. So I think that in generic terms, we are a sustainable development agency, but I don't think that means we should go and draw S&Ts in New York for a month, a year, as part of the sustainable development jamboree. I think they're different things. Just lastly, Chair, thank you very much for raising the question of the mines again. I do think this is one of those cross-cutting issues where we will be commenting on the challenges of the intersection between the coal resources of Mpumalanga sitting under some very good farmland, sitting in environmental hotspots, representing a huge market opportunity and a job opportunity, and somewhere as an agency we are probably best placed to suggest what the trade-offs and the balances are. And it is one of the items that is very much on the environmental agenda where we see that there is a real need for a cross-sectoral coordinated approach, and that probably we're one of the few agencies that's in a position to engage it. So it is very squarely on the agenda. Corinne, you wanted to add on?
Thanks, Chair. The Planning Commission as the Planning Commission is not playing a leading role in preparations for COP17, the Department of Environmental Affairs represents South Africa. We've been working with them on issues. We've got quite a close relationship with them. With the department, we've consulted on the green paper stroke white paper process, and so I guess our job is to try and increase policy coherence, but we see that as a more medium to long term thing. We're not major players in COP17 as the Planning Commission. Our minister, however, chairs the transition committee on the Climate Green Fund, and we think that that's one of the three key issues in COP17 in Durban, whether we can establish a climate green fund, what the rules of the game are, what the sources of the funding are, et cetera, et cetera. And in his capacity as chair of that, and we're supporting him in his capacity as chair, we've been able to interact with local and international players on the climate financing issues. Just again, I think part of our role is policy coherence. Part of our role is not to take over the home of the Sustainable Development Framework. But yes, one of the things that's vexed our minds for a long time is how come there's so much policy incoherence in South Africa? And it, you know, all governments have silos, all governments over the world. You can talk to the Brits or the Germans and what the Ministry of Finance tells you about climate change, what the Ministry of Environment tells you, often two different things. But in South Africa, we seem to have a lot of policy incoherence, of sectoral policies that are contradictory, don't talk to each other. And we certainly see that as part of the role of trying to bring about greater policy coherence. The mining sector is one such example.
I think if I can just say, you know, it will be useful that in November when you bring out this document, with this issue of where sustainability fits in, we should be driving it, we should be monitoring it, because it's really a monitoring issue. Because, I mean, sustainability as far as the environment is concerned is one issue. But sustainability as far as resources are concerned is another issue. Sustainability about everything in life is an overall governmental issue. And again, I think it should be something that's sharpened somewhere. I mean, I would like to see us, I mean, I've done some little things myself. You look around, what do people think of sustainability? The problem is if we don't have one coherent plan on the table to say this is what we mean by sustainability, it's difficult to engage any department. Because, I mean, they have their own view of what is sustainability. I mean, for the mining department and for environment, it's two different issues. Whether. Unless you have a coherent government position on sustainability and who will be monitoring and who will be seeing regularly that, you know, that's one of our problems. You know, if you don't have monitoring of the water sector, even the environmental sector, it's those departments themselves that feed whatever information they want to cabinet, and that is what drives whether there's compliance or not. I mean, I've had that experience myself, having been there in another life. And so, you know, we need some things we need to take outside. Some of us saw the value of a planning commission exactly that it gives the presidency the capacity to see independently what's happening in the department. That's the beauty of a planning commission. If you don't do that and don't give the presidency the capacity, now as I say, I would have liked to see it in a different form and so on, but at least even in the form it is, the issue that the Morgan raised is where does the whole plan of sustainability, what does it actually mean in South Africa? And so on, and therefore, it will be easier for us to be able to engage our departments because we'll say, well, this is the sustainability plan. And I mean, to what extent are you not complying with that? And we then become the eyes and ears also of what is happening. But at the moment, if you don't have a central place where we say this is what we believe sustainability, in any case, in my view, if you are a true developmental state, you cannot do it without a proper sustainability plan. And that everyone buys into. You cannot do it. I mean, you're then just another state somewhere. You know, it's not going to work. All right, so I think we've had those inputs. Now, what I think we should do is the departments have prepared little inputs. I've told them that to do something to see how they see themselves responding to the commission. And and I thought it would be good for the Commission to hear how they're looking at things to give you first-hand experience how that's going in the department. A lot of issues we raised here today are the things we've raised with the department. We imagine that some of the things are the same. Who is leading the delegation? Mr. Mbaza is sitting here, one of our big DDGs, who is usually our acting DG when the other DG is not around. The other acting is not around, she's the acting. But I see she's got a side seat here. So who's leading the delegation?
Chair, I'll do it.
Mr. Miller, another Miller. Lenny Miller just control the water department. Okay, how about you? Give us input.
Chair, yes.
If things have been raised already, leave and then just give the key issues, okay?
Chair, I'll just do the introduction and I just want to make a comment.
There's three documents here. This one of the MBC, and there's one from environment, and there's one from water. Okay, have 1 minute comfort break. Let's have a minute comfort break. Go to dark places. I don't know why these documents aren't handed out. Alright, 2 minutes break. Go wherever you have to go. Whatever you do, you have to do. Whatever you do, is do it very quick.
I know, man. Thank you.
Here, because yes, last night we had this session of our minister. There are a number of other processes. It's an opportune time that the Planning Commission is producing this report, because as you are aware, as members of the committee, we're doing the legislative review, we're looking at institutional realignment, and very importantly, the revision of the National Water Resource Strategy. And because Fred Van Zyl is driving that process, he will do the presentation, because it's actually a combination of a number of issues. We've also got Solly Mabuda here as our Chief Director of Planning. It's very closely linked to the work they also do. You've met Solly when you were in Pretoria. Tan Dekker is here, Cornelius Reuters, as well as our Acting Chief Financial Officer. Thank you, Chairperson. Fred will do the presentation.
Little Fred, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. One of these is comments from different things, so there are two layers, but I'll also jump over the detailed ones because we don't have enough time, so for details. So what I'll do, I'll respond from the partner's point of view, but I'll also highlight specific issues, and then to share some key activities we're doing on this process. My comments will be about the water components, and that we don't deal with all the real-world issues. Now, there are three core issues as a general response. We acknowledge and we fully support the Commission in terms of action, and we can just confirm, beginning of the year, we wrote a formal letter from DD to DG requesting a partnership and requesting support, so that initiative has taken place. We take note of the planned actions that those of the NBC, and especially on the the work on plan, which we simply would like to see, there's a proper water chapter in that guiding the process. And then the critical message is, at least we appreciate the important recognition of the importance of water. I think we can just make sure that is central our new development, if we can just appreciate that as being acknowledged now. In terms of the the diagnostic overview, there are basically three or four categories. There were water services, which is reflected in Section 4, 5, and 7, the water infrastructure and planning, and then the water resources as a resource. And I'll just highlight these issues. So, the first one that we appreciate is the on water services, the appreciation for the success we had in access to water services. I think you also presented that aspect. But in parallel to that, we also support the principles that we have to address critical issues. We did produce the energy report. I mean, there are critical issues, so those are the skills, the governance side, and we need to address it, and it's also reflected on that energy side. We said we have to deal with this in our action plan, that we have to deal with process more than just money. And then we also support the need to address organizational stability, leadership, and accountability. We have to sort out the roles, responsibilities in the process and programs. And especially the word effectiveness is very critical. So these issues are totally supported in that package of services side. Getting to the inadequate infrastructure, which is Section 3, the first one is that we again appreciate the acknowledgement that water management plays a central role in economic development. And I think that this is a very important aspect. Then we also appreciate comparing side that for the work we're doing on the national planning. We also appreciate that action. But then the big issue that comes out now, the need to timely respond and translate ideas to action. And I think this is all our concerns, and you also raised it from your side, how to, we've got ideas, but timely respond. And I think this is what we totally support, and that's where we initiate this whole investment framework, not only for the sake of what's happening, but we also start engaging TCTA and mobilize what we can do to make it happen. But it's also about processes. But we have to say that must take place within a broader context that delays the implementation can in many cases be ascribed to inadequate integrated planning. For example, the Dwip Dam is now delayed again in terms of mines going up and down, decisions, the uncertainty about the coal mines in the Palale. So we have to describe that also to the lack of overarching high-level business, and I think that's where the Planning Commission can and should facilitate good actions. Then inadequate financing is and remains quite a big concern in terms of how to deal with this business. So we appreciate that, and I think the department is taking serious action around it, and that's why my colleague from the infrastructure is also here to respond. And then a specific issue about the delay in producing the National Resource Strategy 2. We acknowledge the concern, confirms this is receiving our highest attention, and we are concerned about that. But we do have to raise something about this strategy, and hopefully we will soon talk to you about this and have an active debate on the strategy very soon. But the principle that's under inadequate infrastructure placed, not under resources management, is a concern that it creates the impression that the strategy is about infrastructure, and that's wrong. Because the strategy is much more. And I think we have to understand that the water resources strategy is about leading us into a new era of smart water management. And if you go back, there is an existing strategy. And the problem with the existing strategy is not owned. It's not implemented. It's good, but it's not owned. And in dealing with this, and what my and the top-off's concern is, what else do we have to make to make it a success? And I can just raise it. I had a discussion with Mike on these issues. But there's a major difference in the present strategy we're going to present to you. The first one is about implementation. How do we make it implemented? The second one is how we work into a new era of smart management, because it's not just about construction. Now we have to think about governance and integration and alignment and optimization. And this is critical that we understand that. I will just highlight that also the other difference is we added two new components to the strategy. And one is, we call it core strategies. We had a list of 14 in the old one, now we raised issues. So I just want to highlight that, and hopefully you will appreciate that. The one is the centrality of water that's coming through. How do you raise it and make it central? And in that centrality is the decision making, whether water should just respond or we start dictating. And if the answer is yes or yes, maybe, or no, we have to start ruling the game in a bit as well. The second component of the strategy is the alignment to macro studies, the growth path, the IPAPS, the energy strategy. We need to start engaging and have an integrated approach. So there's a whole chapter on this whole issue on principles and engagement. And one of those issues we saw, just to say thank you for your comments as well, the introduction of this water footprint concept. Not only about user GDP, but also the negative impact footprint and also the value to contribution to the country. And how we deal with this, and that footprint dictates whether there should be water development or not, and then we start also get this concern, like we're all concerned about the carbon footprint, but why should we rule the water footprint? So those issues we bring up as concepts in this business. The third one is very critical that we also think about the whole concept of sustainable management. We put so much infrastructure in that we don't focus on sustainability. And then the fourth one is the improved governance. There's no argument on the, that theme. Dwell must adjust itself in terms of leadership, but also we call it intergovernance, how we work together under departments, but also the need for better regulation, better planning, but and then also the roles of sectors in terms of their accountability and responsibilities. Then within the strategy, we've got four critical ones. And one is the model conservation, which is the last. And then we've added a new one, stretching water. How do you rethink water, et cetera? And then the other one is the investment framework and protection. So I'm just saying we've added a lot of things, and we added the sector component. We also added chapters now on enabling issues such as institutional capacity. So I'm just saying to Mike, this takes some more work, and that also creates some delay because this is something new thinking as real make happen thinking issues. And hopefully we'll have an excellent debate on those issues. So just on that one, we do apologize it's late and we've owe it to the country, but we want to make a difference. All right. So,
Now the problem is also, you haven't mentioned it, is the minister is busy with a business plan review, and all these issues on the table, and there are people from the outside that are advising them. So you can't also run ahead of the two. So there's a bit of a letting the two run parallel. I know, for example, we've been meeting for the last two or three days with the to see how far they are and so on. Whole new IT system, looking at IT differently, et cetera, et cetera. So those things have to work in parallel. No use bringing out a water strategy and then later on we get some input from the business review to say, but you know, these issues are also on the table. So I think we should just bear in mind that those issues are taken off.
Thank you for that. But also the critical issues are only like the business now to make it happen. How do you buy in to achieve outcomes and make a difference? And we talk about the vision. We need long-term vision, but we also need to visualize, say, Africa 2015, that we really go for that and do that, but it must be practical and functional. Just two other comments quickly is this, the issue about sustainability operational maintenance has been emphasized, and I think this is a lack of investment. All our funds are focused on infrastructure development, but almost some estimates are that the own M and present value is double that of infrastructure investment. And if we don't start working with that, with the institutional capacity, we've lost. But I think the reflection on wastewater works is more about poor management than just about infrastructure. And functionality, I've just copied the latest report from the Stats SA, where they did a comprehensive study on functionality, and I just released it's, although we've got 94% access to infrastructure, the functionality is at 75% nationally, and in provinces like Mpumalanga, it's less than 40%, and Limpopo is 40% functionality. And that's from Stats SA, which said that it was. So this is, these are critical.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in that report, we also have different actions questions about how many along the interferences are from 14 days to 2 months. It was interesting that we start looking at 14 days, functionality goes down to 60 and 40% nationally. So if we start measuring our references. So I think this is critical. We will talk about water quality, but access, I think this is where the old choice way based on the hotspots is about functional. When I assessed all the elections, all those people had infrastructure. It's interesting that report you also see that 99% of all informal settlements do have interim infrastructure. It's about functionality. So this is critical that we support this action, and that we also propose in Dwa that we have a dedicated program now over Minister of Public Infrastructure to focus on this issue. This whole regional context comes more and more. We know about the bulk planning, etc., especially international, but also local. But regional for me is very much linked to a link with the economic and social sectors, that we have a common goal. And I do believe that the role of the Planning Commission in terms of deciding where things should happen, because most of these economic sectors are spatially, the food security, the minerals, the energy side. And in the strategy, we have long engagement with the energy sectors, and the message that's come from the energy strategy is a bit different to the reality. The energy strategy says we're going to halve the water use and be more and double up energy. But the reality is that we will have a crisis until 2020 for energy, and they're actually taking all the mothball power stations out and reactivate them again, and that means more water. And to achieve the carbon footprint, they're going to double the water use. So we're not going to get the maintenance, we get more and more water to achieve this carbon footprint. So the reality is different to the extended over the next 10 years. We've got serious issues. We also decided not to go for the Liberalis scheme because of their decision. But suddenly they said, no, wait. Don't take the water away. Clear market for us. And what's interesting in terms of the mining itself is that the coal mines are expanding. There are quite a few coal mines coming in, and they export all those mines, other coal, to internationally. So they need water as well. And now it's interesting about the carbon footprint. We cut back, but internationally it's using our coal. So we actually give them coal for more carbon issues. So just an interesting high-level decisions we have to do. All right. Some specific comments. I think we are engaging with the Planning Commission. Presentations have been made also to you guys on the work being done by the department, and in the statement that supports us. This translation of actions, this we are highlighting, this is a critical area. In the 7 strategic areas, there are strategic committees now with the sectors, and the whole idea is to put it all together into integrated sector actions. But we're also resolving and going out to institutional using the DCTA and institutional bodies how we can mobilize and fast track issues. But my colleague on the possibility that they talk more about that. And there's something about the strategic which I'm looking into details around that. I think the whole issue about risk management is also highlighted here, and I think this is critical. If we don't achieve these issues, making the correct decisions is going to have long-term impacts. And I think this engagement is critical, that how we deal with this, because as soon as we approve a license, we actually sit with it. And that is a major concern, and that includes the operational maintenance. So in this whole process, we are developing this investment plan. This investment plan is not just about saying what the money we need. It's about what's a logical delivery for debate, what's next, and in line with the actions. It's quite comprehensive. But in this whole process, it's integrated, that, as you say, this source to tap the source for all sectors, right to the outcome. And then we're also working on that institutional restructuring program, which you're already involved with, and this is also being delayed, but it's critical that we rethink this institutional model. And we had a debate yesterday last night around this issue. But especially in terms of the regional issues of local governance, where I did have a slide here in my other presentation, but it's clear that the urban areas are covered by water boards and the rural areas are not. And we have to look at the new financing strategy as well, because the tariffs are going overboard now, and the cost of water to rural areas, which is not affordable. And we have to look at the national type of tariffing like Eskom, instead of just scheme-based issues. The other core issue is the issue about South Africa's path is highly resource intensive. I'm glad it's raised that we increase the profile of the importance of water, and especially the situation we are in now, that we're reaching that critical limit in terms of the fresh water. And this prioritization and highlighting this is critical. But this is about how we deal with this business. And that's come to the centrality now, that you have to help us out to make what is central to decision making, not just a responsive issue. And this is critical, because we at that brink now of what we do now will dictate bridging area of moving into this new era. Then the improvement of management is critical. I think we are not dealing properly with dedicated programs of protection. with some issues that what's our leadership, how we take lead. And Chair, you also responded that it's the reactive versus leadership issues, and you also stated that. I think this needs to do how we deal with the sector to thrive and make sure it's the right thing to achieve the outcome is critical. And I put up there as non-negotiable. We have to do this and build that capacity. And then the importance of today's climate change is also supported. And this is incorporated into our business now. And then so this is also part of the strategy, but we also have to emphasize this. I've just worked on that chapter now. We have to emphasize that climate change is top on top. We're already in a stressed country. We're first stressed by existing development. We will be further stressed by pollution and new development. And this climate change is stress on stress on stress. And so it's not about something new. It's about being smarter about how to deal with stress. I think this issue comes back then to the vision of the food security. We do have a lack of the clarity on where do we stand on the food security. It's all in the IPAP and the new growth path. But when we talk to, and I have got effective engagement with the department, there's an old food strategy, I think 2002 and 2006, but this has not been approved. And we have spoke to all the unions, etc. as well. And we need to get clarity on how we deal with this versus to respond. And especially this whole neighboring country and using the region as a benefit are different options. But we also have to look at the total functionality if we can't. The security of South Africa and boundaries and the border controls, how do we deal with this business? Then the last one is the critical cost-cutting elements. And I would just emphasize the integrated manner with social and economic sectors. How do we facilitate this integrated manner? This is one of the big challenges. Who leads? We go for agricultural development. Is it water to provide water? But what about the land? What about the capacity? What about the markets? What about et cetera? And the same thing, how we engage to get into regional solutions on economic issues. And that's a critical area. I think the value of water and appreciation for water is also critical, how we get this up. And I think the whole issue of addressing the poor is coming all over the place. But I see you also refer to the issue about health. That, and I know that it's in the health strategy, access to water, as in the schools as well. It's a job creation, it's in agriculture. So I'm just emphasizing this we totally support this action. On the agriculture side, I just want to say that we have to link ourselves and have create formal structures in Dwight itself to engage on strategic levels. But you also need that action. Then this whole macro issue about knowing where people are going, the whole migration stories, and who oversees this business. In our latest stats, SA figures, we saw that all the provinces are out-migrating except for Gauteng and Western Cape. KZN is neutral in this whole business, but even Gauteng is fourfold that of Western Cape. So we have to understand these dimensions, and somebody must take up front. And together with that is the social livelihood, service levels. So the whole focus on where infrastructure provided and how much we sit in the rural areas, how we going for economic development in the rural areas, do we move the water to the people, economic to the people, and do we actually add economic water to the rural areas instead of just basic water. Those are critical decisions. We will start to top it up with some enabling economic development. But that's critical. The statement comes from the Planning Commission itself in Section 5. It says the solution lies not complete centralization or decentralization, but you raise this issue. We are concerned about the municipal capacity. The real issue about dealing with municipalities in their capacity is a serious concern of taking that leadership. And somewhere we have to rethink that business. But we support the principles. And now just some responses. You can go through it. We are taking actions on regional planning. We talked about master planning. We have established provincial planning forums and intergovernmental forums in this action. And then a cross-cutting issue that I thought of highlighting issues that, which is not specifically water, but this whole thing about skill development as stated, funding and financial management, accountability, authority structures, corruption, improved governance performance, good leadership in water and job creation are all applicable to it. So So although it's not specified under water, I think we will take that very seriously and respond. So in this whole process, Chair, I've added some actions that we are taking, and you can go through it, the CETA, talking the council, the training, working on specific leader training on operators, etc. There are quite a few issues happening. And then support various actions on local government delivery. But in terms of support, we're still concerned we're doing the work for them and not taking that capacity, and it becomes a dependency. So we can go through this, but there are key issues, and I just want to highlight, coming from the Commission itself, the core paragraph, which we totally approve. What resources are another constraint, and then involved, South Africa will face a binding water constraint, and then it needs improved water resource management, promote efficient use and protection. I think you summarized very clear what it is for our strategy. So thank you for summarizing it and setting it on out that we in the future, you know, especially in the big strategy, the emphasis on how to do this. You know about the all-town studies that we've done. I think it is a picture we did present to you from the planning side the other day when you visit. But there are quite a few issues that the focus is not only on infrastructure, but on improved management, and supporting your cost-cutting status of functionality and the use of other resources. Just to highlight that comprehensive presentation was made to the Portfolio Committee in August, and that you're aware of those issues. The other issues, how we deal with the complexity of water management. And it's not just about the addition of dams, and that's why we create this new thinking of marketing it, moving into the era of new smart water management. Improved governance and discipline, coordination, information management and knowledge, alignment, negotiations, but also stressing the water we have, and reuse. So it's a whole package, so I don't want to go into detail, but we have to get the message through. Our dam building is limited. We're going to have a few, and we will have into more information transfers, but this generation, we have to invest in that action. And what we have
to
do.
You don't even have A and D on them. Look at how old, I mean, the more I think about A and D,
the mine water desalination.
Where?
The second one under desalination, Chair.
Mine water desalination. But you know, one of the things that strikes me about our response to A and D, it's a response that serves mine and not the country. What I mean by that, we're trying to get the water to certain levels, and sometimes before even further levels, so that people can mine. Whereas, I mean, really what we should be looking at is saying, and no one can actually tell me how much water is there that's called A and D. And if we were to take that water and take all of it out and recycle it and clean it up, I mean, what water resource would that? There's no work like that. Why? Because we just want to keep it at a certain level for the mining. So just on that issue alone, those kind of policy issues, it just seems to me, you know, we respond ad hoc to things. In a crisis, water is decanting. So how do we bring that under control instead of saying, this is a problem, but it can actually be a source. It can be a big solution. If we work out that there, I don't know, so many cubic liters of water in those mines, actually that could be in a water source. We pump it all out, clean it up, that's it. Now what do we say? We're just going to keep it below the ecological, whatever, EC line. So that, just actually, when you think about it, you're just thinking half-baked. We don't seem to have vision when it comes to problems. But okay, you call it water, mine water salination, important.
As a resource, not as just as a protection site. Right. So I think it's critical that you raise that issue here, because my discussion with my planning colleagues in terms of the National Water Resource Strategy now, is from the reconciliations, it is clear that if we don't deal with that, we have a twofold impact. If it goes on even with the new development, we have to dilute and use fresh water to dilute it, so we lose our resource. That doesn't make sense. The other side, we need more water. So, sorry, it's here, but we agree that from our side, it's a must that we use that resource as a solution and not just as a response. It also comes out in the Olifants River, where we have a minus 200 cubic deficit now on our water balance. So we have no option of going into these areas and use and look at mines, and even not only the desalination, but also the, all these big mines using the water, optimizing that water systems. So that becomes critical, that issue of stressing water. So thank God, we have to find that message. It's critical that we have this call, opening our eyes, we have a new vision about what's happening. But what the big message is, and this is how we break the news, water, the new water cost. We all complain about the cost of new schemes, but that's the actual cost. Yesterday we discussed it about the raw water at the dam, we talked about 18 rands a cubic meter. That is the cost. The only reason why we pay for it cheaply in the Johannesburg and Cape Town, we got all systems that we equalize the system and integrate it. But in the rural areas, we don't have it. So that is the cost. And we estimate that even with the domestic side coming, we talk about 30 rands a cubic meter. Now, how are we going to deal with this? So we have to rethink our modeling. But the other issue, water will cost more, and we saw the energy side, but we have to have a tactical approach of how to deal with this process of funding and tariffing. And it also includes issues as the value of water. If we start putting in cost and investment on resource protection or social issues, then how we deal with those issues and who's going to fund it? Because at the moment, I do have a concern on races of mine. We sat the other day with the Cabinet Lohotla in the presidency, and it was quite an issue that the DG may sit and, oh, what is not our concern? Treasury then said, oh, what is okay, you know, it's okay, you can deal with it. So it appears not to be a priority, especially on the social component side. So somewhere with them, something must start ringing somewhere. Specifically, the impact of water, and I think we need that recommendation as well. Water is limited already. And so far, we in the strategy or the IPAP, it says we have to go for irrigation. How we support that with our limited water, and even if we make water available, it's at cost. It's very expensive. So if we make those major decisions and the water is available, it's still possibly unsustainable. So there are critical issues that we possibly have to have a new deal with stretching the water by making it more effective and have a deal with them, but to make water more available. But the other side, we talk about water education reform. We want that to happen. So the government will start thinking about the responsibilities, and especially on the developmental state story, we start putting in dams like that in the Eastern Cape from a driver point of view and job creation point of view. We also see that there's issues about job creation. We invest in operational maintenance and refurbishment. It's a massive opportunity to mobilize a lot of jobs. So just a summary, Chair. The statement was made that the water management is complex, and it is also as now a sector and a country issue, not just a Dwa issue. And that coordination is critical. The question is, are we running out, going to run out of water? Well, we've got three answers. The first one, we have a sea there, but it's cost. I think the critical message doesn't come through. All our reconciliation strategies make a critical assumption. And if you want to make a statement that we will not run out of water, it's assuming three things. There will be demand of conservation management. And this way, if there's no demand of conservation management, we will have to. The second assumption is that we will stretch our existing resources and make use of every single opportunity. If we don't have that, we will have a problem. And the third message is, if we don't respond and get the link from the idea of projects to linking, make those projects happen, then we will have problems. So we have solutions, but it's up to us. And if those three actions don't happen, it's critical that we get our plans on reconciliation sorted out. And with a limited resource, we have to prioritize these issues now. And I don't think we're going to need all these options, so we're going to have to go for risk management as well in this process. So it's all part of the story, Chair. So there's a critical summary. We try to capture it in the what is our strategy, the state of water situation, the critical role of water in the economy, the centrality of water, and the smart management. Thank you, Chair.
Anything else from Dwa you want to add?
No.
You see, this is a very good response. In the sense that you did what we wanted you to do. Take the MPC report and respond to it. But again, you see, I want to raise the same thing I raised with the MPC. If we don't highlight, you see, you do everything in the way of narrative. but we're not actually pinpointing what we need to do and what action. Now, I know for you, you have to be careful. You're an official. You don't just want to come and give inputs from the committee. But I want to suggest to both the NPC and the Department of Water, at the very least, optional with the environment, that it's really important you go and sit down and together, without trampling, that's the way you're not going to trample on each other's toes. If you look at the input you're giving, you can see that the thinking is very much very similar and what has to be done. But what I want now us to do is to start, for example, starting that debate on, for example, this whole thing of a centralized infrastructure planning and centralized infrastructure. What is it that we have to change that will bring that about? So, for example, the funding by the way Treasury funds the projects, the way that in future, when Treasury decides to support any kind of infrastructure, it must be an infrastructure plan from source to tap. So it doesn't matter whether you're approving in that plan the money for municipality is going to be X amount, the money for the department is X amount, the money for the water board is X. It doesn't matter. But it has to be a plan that goes all the way. No use us putting infrastructure halfway and then we can't use it for 5 years with half the infrastructure. So to get a centralized infrastructure planning, that's the first thing we have to do, is that Treasury must only agree to funding when it's the whole plan. Then secondly, the type of funding, et cetera, et cetera. You see what I'm trying to say? So Fred, you guys now with interactions from us and your own interactions, your interaction with the NPC, you're starting to identify the issues that we worried about and that we're raising and that you also worried about. Now what we need to do is to start now putting that more concretely down to say, to create that thing, you need this. Part of that may be there is a possibility of changing the law, but the chance of changing the law or definitely the constitution would be difficult. So that's not an option. So if that's not an option, how do you create new mechanisms for intergovernmental cooperation? Now you know the thing I keep on raising is protocol. This is something I saw in other parts of the world where it's difficult to make laws cross-cutting. But you can sit down with another department and you make protocol. So you sit down with local government, with SAUGA, with all those people and say, from now on, when we're going to look at infrastructure planning, we're going to agree to one infrastructure plan. And, you know, et cetera, et cetera. With Treasury, this is how the funding is going to work. It's going to be conditional grant. If they don't use it for that, the money gets taken back. Of course, it's all the problems with the arrears and stuff we'll have to work on, but that's a separate thing. You first have to change the model to work properly. So you know what I'm trying to say, Fred? Is you guys are listening to what we've been trying to engage you on. You yourself have seen these as some problems. Now the point is we must start putting down, because why? Because water cannot solve this problem on their own. But with the NPC, you now have to start engaging local governments to see how we're going to get agreement on that. And once we start talking and how we're going to do it, so once local government knows we're not going to take their towers away, but we actually want to create institutional arrangement to make work what is there, and, you know, to put, then it's a different story, and we could probably have a more proper debate on the issue. So I want you guys to really now move that step up. And I think it would be good if you actually sit together and work out those things so that when you get your report in November, you're actually pulling in the same direction. And hopefully you will take the other role players with you. Okay. So, just to say, I thought that was a good understanding of where we should be going with this. But again, as I say, we see what the problems are. We're not spelling out the areas we have to look at to actually get solutions to. The kind of things you guys were looking at last night and starting to debate with the minister and so on. Okay. We now have to make that debate wider. So that before we then come to conclusions, and this is our model, then we find now we have to start engaging with local government. Now you have to start all over from the beginning instead of having gone together as everyone. Okay, that's the input, questions, discussions. If the NPC also want to engage with the department, you're more than welcome. Mr. Tetsi, Mr. Mdude.
Just a comment on page 12, slide 23. I think this slide says it all in as far as effective management of water is concerned.
we can have all the coordination, but I think the people who have to play a major role is also implemented in municipalities. And we always talk about skills development. There's a lot of money going to local government for capacity building. We can have all these good plans, the programs, but they won't implement themselves. There must be someone with capacity. But now, what happens is basically what the chairperson is saying, that the wolf is watching or looking after the sheep, you know. I mean, there's a consistent pattern of appointing competent officials, and there are people who are competent to look after them. And when you talk about capacity as well, I mean, for councillors especially, it's like it's optional and not obligatory. People who are supposed to oversee that implementation is being executed. So if they're not well trained, I don't know where we are going to have all these plans year after year, year after year. And at the end of the day, it's just fruitless expenditure. A lot of money is being spent, but there's no work that's delivered.
Thank you, Chair. Mine really is a comment on page 17 on slide 33. And I think this comment is directed also to the planning National Planning Commission, that should, you know, one of the biggest problems of South Africa is that the majority of the population of South Africa is working class and indigenous people. And that every time when we are trying to address a problem, we raise prices. I'm reading this slide here to say that one way of addressing the issues of making water more available, but we must accept that it will be costly. You know, electricity is the same. South Africa, a few years ago, it had electricity that was the cheapest in the world. Today, we are the most expensive. And why? Because we are supplying big companies at the expense of the ordinary citizens. And in the issues of the issue of water, for instance, if we are going to do the same, we'll have to look at what is happening in the rest of the world in terms of when the masses of the people are revolting against its own government. Is that what we want to see in South Africa? If our solution to every problem is going to be raising of the prices, and that yet we know that we've got the highest unemployment rate, where are those people going to get the money to pay for all these rising costs? So I'm just saying the Planning Commission, when it's sitting and looking at these things, it really has to take that into account as to how best we can address some of the challenges that are facing the country without, always resorting into raising the prices. The typical example is in the labor, market, for instance, that the most ordinary workers are not earning much, and you find that our CEOs in South Africa are the most highest paid in the world. And yet, and you look at the food prices, Chairperson, you go to the markets, to the supermarkets, and you go around and look at the shelves, that within a very short space of time, within a 3-year or 4-year period, the food price in South Africa is actually 10 times doubled, and that nobody is doing anything about it. And the masses out there are beginning to be impatient and blaming government on this thing. So I'm saying as the National Planning Commission, really you have to look at these things and see how best we can be able to address this without, before it becomes too late for the country to be able to, to sort these problems without seeing the masses actually revolting. I just want to make that comment when I'm looking at this, because it's really becoming very, very serious. Nobody's speaking for the poor. Here, nobody. The labor market is not speaking for the poor, they are speaking for the organized labor, not even the unemployed, let alone the downtrodden. Nobody is speaking for them. And you'll never see them doing in the streets, because they are somewhere in the bundles, They can't even get to the cities because you can't even drive to the roads. The roads where those people stay, your cars won't get there. So really, they are the most downtrodden. So in your planning, don't only look at the urban and peripheral, you know, urban areas, but look and also take into account the most vulnerable of our society, and they are making the majority in this country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I like the question for this slide is 24. Regarding for the skill challenge, I think you highlighted for the Department of Water Affairs will be running the council development program. Then you are targeting 166 council. I'd like to know how you can select this 166 council. What's your stand? This belong to the one province or the cover for the other nine province? This one I just to know. Then how to this follow up after this 166 council for this you are targeted for this development program. This one also want to spend how much you finance in this program from the your department water affairs. So Chairperson, this is my first question. Second question is for your slide is 25, yeah? For you supporting the water service delivery at this municipal level. Because you highlight is supporting 76 municipalities, 73 municipalities for the water quality standard and waste water quality standard. My question is, you got a lot of the number of the municipality. This municipality is also covered for all the nine provinces, or the special for the which province you are the target for a six supporting. But my question is, all that you are supporting for the day come to this water quality stand. Then those municipalities stole all the money from the water board or not? From the this amount for 76, 73, 50, 51, these are too many you are supporting. I'd like to know, they stole all the money from the water board or department side. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mashisha.
Thank you, Chair. I feel this document, you just saying you support this and that. But you are not coming up with plans to address those concerns. For instance, we're saying here you support the need to address organizational stability. But more than half of your management team are on acting positions. You don't tell us how you are planning to address this issue so that you can achieve this organizational stability. So can you come out clear as to what are you doing to make sure that the department is stable, accountable, and effective? Not just to say we will support their concern that is raised by the National Planning Commission. Come up with a practical example as to what are you planning to do. Thank you, Chair.
Any last question?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to also thank the department that their most focus now will be on municipalities. Because all municipalities, they used to prioritize water as their priority number one on their IDPs. But they do not have a water service plan. Whether the department has been able to deal with this issue, because it has been mentioned before that the access to clean water in rural people is a trend to that. Thank you, Chair.
Any last questions? Okay. Responses?
Okay.
Or anyone from the department?
Sure, I'll start with my colleagues can conclude on the support. The first one, Chair, is just today's presentation. I thought it was about the Planning Commission diagnostic report and not analyzing all of its performance. And that when I prepared this and supported my try to reflect it. Last night, the minister made it very clear, say, well, we have to give clear leadership and say where we're going, what's our solution. So tell you what you said. But I thought we're going to have a proper discussion on the national regional strategy that we did talk about the solutions. And I just reflected the indications of what we are focusing on, and that we have a special session to go out and to develop a detailed approach now today was not the intent. So I thank you for that comment, but I think it's important. We just highlighted that there is some responsible actions, that we appreciate that. From a skills point of view, the appointment of competent people, I think this is critical in this whole process. We are engaging with DPOC in the outcome 9.1, the whole issue about skills and prescribing skill standards is part of that action. But I do have a concern that the water side is not properly addressed. It's just the other municipal manager, and we actually have specified standards and control the appointment and capacity. So we do support that action. Thank you for that input. The second one on the whole issue about costs. I raised that specifically because it's about the poor and the viability. It's one of our objects. It's not just economic growth, it's about social security. And this is where the footprint comes in, Chair, is that people argue that agriculture has got 62% water use, only 2.6% of the GDP contribution, so let's stop there. But if you really look at the footprint as we receive it now in debate with the agricultural sector, the food chain industry is 18% of the GDP. A job creation is 54% of all jobs, and rural is 70% of all jobs. So we have to relook at this business, what role it plays in stability, and not just look at the economic value, but the social component. Then the whole idea is that we have to balance the there's actual cost. We can't get away, there's a cost. And even whilst getting into trouble of maintaining its services, but not getting income. So some we have to deal with this, how we translate that to the poor people receiving the benefits, but while we actually have to run the business. And that's a critical area, and I think this is where the spot of the smart management comes in. So I totally support, we have to set those goals, but we have to get the processes sorted out of how to ensure that. Then about the councillors, the 166, the issues that we work on water service authorities. And you know, for the 283 municipalities, only 166 are water service authorities. So it's focusing on the authorities now at the moment, and not on all municipalities. Those are responsible, so that's where the target came in. It's flexible if we add more, it can be more council, but so the council is responsible for that portfolio that we're targeting. That's the first one. It's just a first step. We'll expand and do more. But that's the first target, and that's where the argument about the 166 side. The concern about the page 25, this is about, let's get back to that side. I don't know, there's a blockage on this one. You raised this issue about just support. We added this slide just to say we do respond. There is action. It's not that we are going to do things. We totally try to emphasize that we're moving on to the new era of smart management. We have to do bigger things. But just to reflect that skills is critical, and it's not that we redesign the system. We are taking issues. Just to touch on those issues there. My colleagues, the spatial context was also raised. And I think this is also how we deal with spatial context of water, the cost, and et cetera. Thank you.
Chair, thanks. Can I just add to Dr. Wong's issue about the councillor training? It will be in all 9 provinces. We've got money from the local government, CETA. We will focus especially on those councillors that are responsible for the water and sanitation function they've got in their portfolio. The support around the water quality, blue drop, green drop, we haven't got capacity to support all the municipalities, so we focus on those with the low scores. That scores in terms of blue and green drop below 30%. And if you supplied members of this committee with copies of the blue drop and green drop report, you'll see, it, especially in the green drop report, it's a substantial paragraph describing all the problems in certain municipalities. And those that scored less than 30%, we ask them to submit us with a turnaround plan, how they want to turn it around, and we follow up on them that they do submit those plans and how they are performing in that regard. So we focus on those, the real bad ones. We haven't got capacity to do all of them. So that's what we're doing in this regard. I think Mr. Mateva's question about capacity, our shared acting DG has arrived. I want to pass that for him to answer that question. Thank you, Chairperson.
Again, DG,
Chairperson, honourable members, in response to Honourable Mateba's question, I wouldn't mind, I could give you a miracle response, but I'm going to frame it in the same way, Chair, as Minister did in a press conference just this morning, in that she started working backwards from the DG position, indicating at the press briefing that the process of applications and screenings has all been completed, and had she been able to convene the panel, the interviews for those for the DG position would in fact have taken place today. And then with respect to other positions in the SMS level, there are 23 odd positions which have been advertised over the last month and a half. And the process has been set in motion, just signed off by Minister, in terms of the shortlisting and preparing for the interview process of 23 key SMS positions in the department. And just the acronym referring to the Senior Management Service, and that's from Director upwards. The there's still two that are busy. No, there in fact four that are busy. The disciplinary hearing with regard to the DDG Corporate Services is still ongoing, and the CIO, together with the disciplinary hearings or disciplinary process of two directors within the water trading entity, are ongoing cases. And just to correct, the figure is 26 that I mentioned this morning in terms of SMS level. So those processes are still ongoing, and as you're aware, Chair, that one can't indeed start any process of filling those positions until that due process with regard to the disciplinary issues are dealt with, otherwise one preempts the outcome of a disciplinary process.
I think the input from the department is quite a good one, as I've said previously. I think, DG, now that you're sitting there, I want you to listen to this. You know, I've raised this with the MPC and I've raised it with the department as well. It's fine for us to identify and support the process the MPC has gone through, the diagnostic review. It's fine to ask general questions whether the institutional arrangements are good and so on and so on. The problem is, if we don't tackle the issues head on, as we've been tackling with you, all these issues we raise. I mean, if you want a centralized infrastructure plan, a decentralized infrastructure planning, what do you have to change to do that? I think we must now move to the next one. I really would suggest, if the committee agrees, that the MPC and the department sits together and actually identify those areas that we think we should ask the specific hard questions, and then of course come up with solutions. I've listed some of them here, I'm not going to repeat them again. But you see, that will help a lot, because then the two of you, the two institutions are on the same level. You then have to start engaging other institutions like local government and so on, because a lot of the changes will affect local government. That changes that. Treasury, that has to affect treasury. The model that we've got, whether you call it policies, you call it strategy, you call it whatever you want, there are problems and blockages in the model. And those models, those things I would like you to identify together so that you're pulling in the same direction, so that when we start getting responses in water, what it is we want to do, that we're actually starting to address the real issues and not opening up a generalized debate on issues. You know the things that we've raised about the governance of CMAs and so on, I mean, being done by independent structures outside of the policy framework. Is that what we want? Is that where we're going? Is that going to solve our solution? Is that not entrenching the conflict of people with special interests in the service delivery of water? It seems to us like that, but maybe it's not. So I think those hard questions must be put on the table, as you're already doing with the minister in your process. But let's lift these issues out and let's start with the NPC at the very least. And then, of course, between you can see to what extent you make it public. The last issue I want to raise is, you know, this is my pet hobby, and the committee hates me for it, but I keep raising it. My experiences in government, for whatever
I'm not sure I can remember in your diagnostic review if you actually say something about this or not. You may say something about this. But I would want to see, at least in the way our departments are, in environment and water, that the creating of proper databases becomes a central focus of the department. And that, you know, to get clean and reliable. You know, a lot of information we rely on comes from the local government. Now, this functional local government, to get information from them, well, I mean, you know, get information, but to what extent is it verifiable in any way whatsoever, I don't know. Because in a dysfunctional structure, they can't even run their basic core business. Why are they going to worry about how they keep spending? So I really think that this thing needs to look at, and as part of this whole plan again, DG, whatever our plans are, I know that in our case, we revisit the whole IT system and so on. But it goes further than IT. IT is your infrastructure you create. What steps do we put in place to actually create a database on which people in government, like ourselves, can rely on that information to make all the decisions? I mean, for me, the Planning Commission is one of your biggest tasks, is to sort out that problem, which is your database. Where do we keep these databases? Is it in Stats South Africa? Well, I have some of my own questions about that. Is it in the Planning Commission? Is it in the Presidency? Where are you? So, you know, you can get each department and so on to collect it, but where do we create the analytical capacity to pull these things together and to analyze it properly? You know, so that we governments get proper analysis. You know, I mean, anything. You look at the crime statistics, you look at the criminal justice system, you look in the water sector, you look in... I mean, we want to have a white paper on, and a whole policy on climate change. The only way you can seriously have a white paper and seriously deal with climate change if you have a proper database that collects all the information that is impacting, so you can make decisions about it. I mean, how else can you do it? So this issue of databases, I don't want us to discuss it necessarily now. I really want to flag it very big, because I really think the National Planning Commission is a big role. In the department, they know what our views are about getting our database properly there. And then there's a bigger one that we're thinking of. All right, we've got a little bit of time. Quickly, can we jump to the environment input? Who is leading the environment delegation?
Thanks, Chair. My name is Mark Gordon from the department. My colleague will take you through some of the details around the actual report. But just by way of introduction, and I think in terms of your departure point, Chair, again, we agree with the whole notion of accurate data, and I think we make it very explicit in the climate change response policy. I think just in general, on the approach of the climate policy, I think we're getting into an area where in terms of discussing and understanding the future development of South Africa, in terms of its GDP growth, the whole nexus between development and climate change and that debate and conversation, I think that's happened, and we've had a lot of interaction with the Planning Commission around that. But what's happening in terms of the finalization process around the white paper is that we are getting to a point where we are starting to fix points. And I'll just clarify that in a minute. But basically, we introduced a couple of firsts for South Africa. Number one is the first climate change policy for South Africa. In it, we have a few elements. One is called a carbon budgeting process, which is going to take us about 2 years by the time we finalize that. And in doing so, for instance, we've already put in place a climate constraint on the electricity sector. So you'd know, in terms of the integrated resource plan on electricity, we've basically capped that sector on a kind of 50% carbon budget up to 2030. So by default, we've already started the carbon budgeting process. And I think when we talk about policy alignment, policy coherence, sector planning, sector alignment, it's important that, you know, we get that kind of, in terms of visioning the future of South Africa, we'll have to understand that some of these things have started to happen already. So we've got a couple of interesting dates. We talk about 2020, 2025, 2030. which is the date for the Planning Commission and also the date for the RP report. And in terms of our own forecasting of carbon emissions, we talk about 2050. So number one, there's a carbon budgeting process. And in the carbon budgeting process, we start talking about a carbon budget. So when we talk about the peak plateau decline line, which is peaking in 2020 to 2025 and then plateauing for a period of 10 years and then declining afterwards from 2035, I think many of you know that picture. Well, the picture basically says that everything underneath that line is basically the carbon budget for South Africa. So the shape of how we transition into 2050 and how we start fixing the points on that line and what the shape of that line would be could be different processes, but what you're saying is that there is a finite budget underneath that line. Whatever the shape of the line would be up to 2050 is one thing, but there is a finite carbon budget. So in that context, you know, we really need to know from the Planning Commission's point of view if that approach is good in terms of understanding that and the sectoral alignment and some very key sectors like the minerals and energy complex and how we envisage GDP growth going forward and its association with climate change and development is the debate that needs to happen in the next 2 years. Chair, then the second thing aligned to that is the defining the emissions trajectory. I think Mike earlier on alluded to this locking in and locking out issue, and I think to a large extent we start locking in sectors when we start talking numbers, we start talking dates and so forth. And we have a couple of problems, you know, around some of these issues. And if I can give an example around the RP, we basically put in a number of about 42% renewable energy by 2030. Now, to date, we've really battled to get heavy on-scale deployment of renewable energy in South Africa. There are many issues around regulatory barriers, institutional barriers, financial barriers, and so forth. And if we don't start really sorting those things out, the issue of putting shapes and defining the trajectory and putting numbers like the 34 and 42 really, you know, doesn't hold water in that context if we can't really get off the ground. And we are battling to get off the ground. To get IPPs on board, we're really battling. And then the big issue of the nuclear decision. We envisage from around 2022 onwards, Eskom's big power stations will be coming offline. And a number of them will be decommissioned. And so there's a decision on what will be the alternative power supply for South Africa from around 2022 onwards. So there's a decision on nuclear that also has to be taken into account. Then thirdly, around economic instruments. The policy also speaks to economic instruments, and one we've made explicit is the discussion around carbon tax or the pricing of carbon. And in our consultations with the South African public and different sectors was the issue around ring fencing of carbon revenues and how that would be used really to get the renewable energy sector going or the low carbon development path realized and different clean energy and carbon-friendly technologies going. So we don't have a clear answer on that yet, and many people have raised that often in our consultations. Fourthly, we introduced the aspect of mandated compliance in terms of company plans or facility plans and so forth. And it created some kind of nervousness in the industry in the beginning. We're still consulting on this issue. And I think for some of our large companies like Sasol, Eskom, and the associated industry, it's going to mean a total change from business as usual. And in terms of reporting and the data issues, again, I think that discussion has to happen on a more detailed basis with the sector. Then lastly, Chair, in terms of the Copenhagen undertaking, COP17, where we go, and I think it's an interesting opportunity for us now that we're trying to get the policy into Parliament at least by the end of this month, the white paper, and we're hoping for promulgation before COP17. But it's a kind of signal to the world that, you know, South Africa is serious about climate change.
To your minister, and I discussed it, and she agreed that we should have public hearings on white paper.
We thought that that might happen, and so I think.
So don't rush too much.
All right. But yeah, I think the signal is what I would say.
The signal is important.
The
signal
is important. Yeah.
We can get, of course, momentum up to COP,
yeah.
But whether we finalize it or not.
Yeah. Another story. Okay, I think I'll leave it there.
We will actually soon send out a press statement to start the public hearing sometime in the fourth term.
Okay, I think I'll leave it there and we'll go over to some of the detail around the other cross-cutting issues around the report itself. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. Jim Paul Makotoko. Our view, Chair, in terms of this report was to look at the nine main focus areas that were highlighted. If you can put the presentation, please. Thank you. The nine areas that were highlighted by the Planning Commission and start looking at what our action plans related to those challenges that they've raised would be, starting because we sort of felt that in all these areas, if you look at them, we can have a contribution. If we start with the first one, which is around a high unemployment rate, the department felt if we continue with the facilitation of our green economy strategy, that might help because it has a focus on the green jobs potential. In that strategy, there were seven focus areas that were highlighted. It was around the green buildings and the built environment. It was around transport, clean energy, resource conservation, sustainable waste management, sustainable consumption, looking at agricultural products and food, and also in water management. So we do understand that we have a role. We might not be the main implementers of these programs, but we have a role in facilitating implementation of these programs, which would then lead to increase the creation of jobs. The other area that we've looked at is the expanded public works program, the scaling up of that program. In that program, we have a number of sub-programs around sustainable land use based livelihoods, working on waste, the people in parks, you're working for programs, working for water, fires, and also for the coast. While we appreciate that the nature of the jobs created in this regard are temporary, we also acknowledge the fact that the other focus of these jobs would be to also improve the skills of the people and also the experience so that they can then participate in the mainstream economy. Then we can have more people being employed. The second area, that's also linked to the skills that we're talking about, which was the challenge that they raised, was around the quality of education for the poor South Africans. And we are saying we need to, firstly, as a department, we have been cooperating with the Department of Education, the South African Qualifications Authority, and the Sector Education Training Authorities in supporting a continuous review.
Sorry, don't go into much detail. These are indirect. Just concentrate more on just tell us what they are and then move on.
Okay. So in this one? Okay, in this one, it's just about looking at the environmental curriculum and ensuring that it's also put in the mainstream education and also that we have workshops across all the provinces with the teachers and teachers training in that regard. The second, can we move on then, Kwanele? There's one on the poorly located and inadequate infrastructure. In this area, we are basically focusing on the resolution of claims. Just our contribution in that because we're not the ones that do that, but also our main focus is the support that we would offer to communities post assessments. I mean, members would remember that when we went to the Isimangaliso visit, there were a few examples of how we as a department would do that. The other one is also the contribution of our own environmental assets towards rural development. We're looking at creation of community parks as one of the examples that we have, and also the roads in Isimangaliso as well. You would have seen the example where we also contribute in terms of infrastructure, in terms of the roads to improve access to areas. And then the next one is around the spatial challenges that continue to marginalize the poor. Our focus in this area, Chair, is just to ensure that we start using GIS-based spatial land use planning. Sort of. So it still talks to your databases to ensure that we do have a database and in the country we start improving and coordinating sustainable land use management in an integrated manner. I'm just going to go quickly over there. This one, Chair, I'm not going to cover it a lot because it's related to the climate change issues that Mark was talking to now, but we also have indicated some of the actions that we would have there as well, including natural approaches to a natural resource management program. In that regard, we're looking at establishing minimum requirements for biodiversity management in land use planning, and we're also looking at a biodiversity good practice guidelines for South Africa. So that's some of the things that we would be looking at in that regard. Health, the next one. Okay. In terms of health, in this regard, we're actually looking at the reduction of atmospheric pollutants, which would then, in our case, include the continued rollout of the Cleaner Fires campaign as one of the examples. We're also looking at effective waste management, looking at the general hazardous and medical waste institutions. Okay, in this, I think the next three, Chair, are not, they are just cross-cutting issues where we're looking at performance and maybe our input as local government, the capacity building that we would do, involvement in IDP reviews and so forth. And in terms of crime, we're looking at collaboration with justice classes on environmental crimes. We're also looking at how we deal with the bigger issues around poaching, how we can have collaborations then with SARS, SAPS, Interpol in some cases, and also how we would then improve compliance with our own environmental legislation, both through proactive and reactive inspections and ensuring that there is compliance. And in a nutshell, if I'm to rush through that.
Sorry to arrest you a bit, but a lot of those issues are cross-cutting. I think the same comment I would want to make, the issues that Mark were highlighting where there's serious blockages where we have to go again, I think you must meet with the NPC, the department, together start identifying those areas, and then together hopefully start engaging the other role players like mining, etc., or energy. So I would make the same point with you guys. Please, let's sit down and let's put on the table, honestly, what it is that has to change for us to be able to achieve our 20-year plan. Okay.
Mr. Morgan? Yeah, thank you for starting with those who are very brief.
Sorry, what did you say?
I said thank you for starting with those who are very brief.
Oh, yes, I was very strategic.
Yeah, I don't know, I won't. Yeah, so on the scaling up expanded public works, we are pleased to hear that, but at the same time, one is bothered by the qualification of a creation of a different job. As you correctly say, that that's temporary. So I'd like to know what role would you play to ensure that at the completion of the project, skills that have been acquired are not, do not end up redundant. And coming back to the legal expertise for the commissioners here, we have issues of mitigation and compliance. That only one person of our portal was mentioned. I can imagine him being overseas for business meetings and we have problems here. How do you add more people to the legal expertise?
You like the lawyer.
Chairperson, let me just preempt my comment by saying this is the Department of Environment is a department which generally runs very well. So, I don't think anyone in the committee has any particular problem with how it conducts its business. But having said that, I'm disappointed with the presentation. I'll tell you why. From what you've given us, it's very much how you respond to the annual State of the Nation of the President. You kind of look at what the priorities are, and then you respond to what you are already doing. And the National Planning Project is something very, very different. I mean, we're envisioning a country in 2030. And as I said, I know you guys do most things really well, but what you've really done is just kind of told us what you're already doing and fitted it into the diagnostic points which the Planning Commission has already given us. I think that this is an opportunity for this department, which is a very thoughtful department, so I know that the thinking is all there already, to actually be forthright about the long-term planning problems that you see. And we know you talk about them because you're often very frank with us about, for example, the mine, which the chairperson has already mentioned. And I think we need, my personal view is, I think we need from you more thoughtfulness about the constraints, which I've already mentioned, and, you know, carbon and soil biodiversity and all the rest of it, and actually more specific work on the problems with policy incoherence. Now, one of the things which you guys are always thoughtful about, and that's why I think we need to see it here, is, for example, your relationship as a national department with the provinces, considering that it is a shared competency in terms of the Constitution. And we know that there are problems in the provinces, and I use just the example of let's say, permitting of hunting, where the national department has some serious problems about keeping track or the way it's done at a national level. So I would like to see a lot more thoughtfulness about those kind of things, because you've got, you know it all in the department. If when the National Planning Commission presents us with a vision on 11/11/11, which is after considered consultation, to be able to contribute things like, yeah, what are the policy incoherences, where are the blockages, what are the limits to growth, because otherwise really what you've told us is what you're doing, and you mostly do it quite well. So what I'm really talking about is, I think in terms of what you presented to us today, it's not that stuff is wrong, it's just that it doesn't buy into the vision of, well, it doesn't explicitly talk to the vision of long-term planning, and rather the presentation, it's another way of presenting a strategic plan to us, just whittled down according to someone else's prism. So that's my feelings on it.
Yeah, just like a mega comment. My concern is like that my colleague just highlights. For this department environment, this presentation, I also quite unhappy. You only for the four page, I didn't see the any comment or the your reaction like the water way. So I just say, Chairperson, I wish this one. This briefing is, I think it is, we need more detail for how is this environment can take more comment and reaction, show to the committee what they've done. Even the first question asking, you park to the EPWP for the decent job, how many you create? Because you're talking for the only temporary job. A temporary job is... this is not a job. This is just a temporary. We want for create a different job. Yeah. So I like to get more information from this department. Like I say, past two months, always is the media talking for the rhino poaching. Even just Saturday, is His Majesty King good word to Anikini in his red dance. Also highlight, you see the President Jacob Zuma also attended this function. Especially highlighted for the rhino is approaching this issue. But I saw that today you didn't touch anything anymore in the inside. So I like from the environment department for the reaction, and you are more comment how you are for your department duty can show to the this committee. Thank you.
Because you're going to hear what I say now. No, I think we've already identified
that both the departments would ask you to go and meet with the National Planning Commission to sit down and ask those hard questions. Okay. I mean, obviously what you've done is, what we've asked you to do is to respond to the NPC's report, but that is the whole problem I've raised with the NPC. If you just respond to the report, at the end of the day, you're going to get business as usual. Now, we have to go beyond business as usual, okay? And I've asked you already to please. And hopefully, as soon as your departments have done that and met with the NPC, if you guys have got something, you let me know, and if it's necessary, we'll have a report back. Here on what you've identified and so on, so if you want to add something to the identification. I think that's the best way to go about it. And then, of course, you start engaging other role players so that by November 11th, you actually, when you come up with a solution, there's something that's more forthcoming. Do you want to respond to any of the issues so far? I think that's the general thing that we'll ask you to do.
No, Chair, I think we just accept the comments and by your request, we'll meet with the NPC again and engage on some of the details. Thanks.
I think it might be useful just if Kuben could comment a little around this carbon budgeting and the numbers game, because it's a very hot issue, generating a lot of CO2 in the NPC. But perhaps Kuben could just highlight that.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we welcome the presentation and we thank them for the input. We look forward to engaging with the department. We also welcome the green paper and the white paper process. It's probably worth putting down what the prism that we will be using to look at the environmental issues and the carbon issues. And I'm stressing that this is not the recommendations of the Planning Commission, but it's to give the committee a fair sense of what the prism through which we'll be viewing those issues. And those are that in the view of the diagnostic document, the fact that too few people work in South Africa is the uppermost problem. And so in the transition to a low carbon economy, we've got to separate issues into, I guess, two or maybe even three categories. One is, where are the complementarities between low carbon growth and job creating growth? And there are obvious complementarities. Solar water heaters is a highly labor-intensive activity. Retrofitting buildings for energy is highly labor-intensive. A lot of the environmental programs in the public works program suite are very good from a climate point of view, from an environmental point of view, and their complementarities, their community parks, sustainable land use management. If we can expand the conservation estate in South Africa, the complementarities between the transition to a low-carbon economy and a job creation. There are areas at the other extreme that are potential contradictory. Right? Where industries are both energy-intensive and labor-intensive, we need a slightly different approach. We need to try and support those industries to transition. We need to support them in ways that don't impact on jobs. And we have to be much more, we must cashless on those areas in some ways. We have to be sensitive to the job creation. In particular, where there are energy intensive industries that employ low skilled people, we must be even more sensitive. And I think that's the prism through which we will view the climate change issues. But my reading of the white paper, the draft white paper that I've seen, is that's exactly what the Department of Environmental Affairs themselves are proposing. Thank you.
So you get the invite from us to come and comment on it. All right. Can I thank the Commission very much for taking this opportunity to come and engage with us. I know that this is not going to be the last time. I already have you on our permanent program. I have a program called Annual Engagement. You are on that. I hope that we'll be engaging probably early in the new year if you're bringing out a report at the end of the year. I suppose we'll probably engage with you early in the year on exactly whatever you're proposing around the water and environment. But as I've asked, I really, really ask that to work as cooperative governance. And this is not an issue just for the Commission. This is a responsibility for the department to make sure you engage with the commission, even if they don't want to. The commission sits up there and doesn't want to meet with you. You keep on harassing them and say, I want to meet with you. I want to hear what it is you're doing about water. And what we want to tell you what it is you think should be fixed. The same with the environment, okay? So that we start getting synergies and we start engaging the other organs. So thank you very much for that. I hope this is the beginning of a process. Just for the members, tomorrow SCOPA is sitting with some of our water boards, Bushbuck Ridge, Rochello and Mahalis Water, the problem children, the black sheep in the family. Please, if any of you can make it, I can't make it, but I know Mr. Mateva is going to make it on my behalf tomorrow. As Mr. Skosana, unfortunately, away because he is liquid, but Bushbuck Ridge is your baby. But I mean, I would like it more of the committee today, because you know that they've done the turnaround strategies. We were quite happy with that. And it's important that we encourage that with the turnaround strategy. Then for next week, we've said we only meet on Tuesday if there's work. At this stage, my dear secretary here has not shown me any minutes or anything about anything, so at the moment there's no work for next week. I will keep Tuesday as a date, fixed date, and I'm sure my secretary will find minutes to be part of it. As you know, I live on the weekend. I'm back again end of next week to WTO. So, Mr. Mateva, hopefully it's not even someone else will just handle any report to be passed. But at this moment, we'll keep the Tuesday as a meeting time, okay? And then for next term, you know that we'll have to do those annual reports and this kind of BRR process. My own view on it, members, is to make it short and sweet and move very quickly because the budget's already been passed. But we'll go through the process. But then, as I said, I spoke to Minister as we suggested on the white paper. She also is fully supportive of the public hearings. I think that's an excellent idea. So we'll get a fresh statement on that and find time in the fourth term for public hearings. If there is time to do something around rhinos, then people come and give us proper solutions. It's no use as a country we talk about rhino problem, but we're not coming with solutions. So we'll ask one or two of the main conservation groups, whatever their solutions are, you know, the ones that are completely mad, and so on. We rather want to kill people instead of rhinos. Not those ones. The others that are more balanced. But we'll try and put that in as well. So at least the annual reports, the white paper, and if we can, rhinos. On the agenda are also the other things, the EIA. I see they mentioned it here. We saw that hearings around that. The working for, but that may all come in the later stage. I still want us also to look at, maybe we'll try and do it during the white paper, briefing from Treasury on the carbon tax, so we also just know what it is that it suggests without having public hearings, but to hear what Treasury is thinking. So those are really the, I haven't got any further announcements on those other issues. I hear that waste, there's one opposition that's interested in Dude and 2AMC and Mamangani and myself, so we'll see how that goes. We haven't heard anything on the USA issue, we haven't heard anything on the annual thing. But any suggestions you have on the annual trip, as I've said, I'm kind of personally seeing it isn't a good idea to do the China type of way of looking at how they do issues and whatever countries are close by there. But obviously that's open still, there's no decision that it was made in that regard. But anyone wants to send me any suggestions, do so. I won't see you there next week, so please stay well. We'll probably see, except for the ones I see at the conference, I'll probably see you at when we start the annual report here. So have a good break and be careful and thanks for this term. I think you've done some good work. Anyone want to add anything to this? Everyone happy? Family, if you drink a lot, if you drive fast.
happened? I mean,
no,
I'm going to